This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severn, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
JR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually write a whole show.
This is the third time you said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying your
day... I'm curious how I have more free time than
no,
you.
No, I'm going to...
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I'm not used to this long, grueling podcast game.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Are you guys just joking around for the next hour?
Fun. Did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s? And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice to him. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hear shock wall.
What the fuck is
shock wall? Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
He's going to fall through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. PTB Nation. Let me know what
you're doing. Here's
our opener. To do worse than Josh Richards. When you're talking in your sleep, when I hold you in my arms at night.
Don't you know you're sleeping in the spotlight? And all your dreams that you keep inside. You're telling me the secrets that you just can't. Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live on this Monday evening here as we reach the fall. Summer's gone, the hot weather's gone, the balmy evenings, my balmy PIC, all gone. Now the cool temperatures, football's here, and we enter the fall doldrums of the world of wrestling. Although, Scott, I think you could argue that... not quite the doldrums this fall in the world of WWE, I don't think.
No, not after what we witnessed last night. Good evening, JR. Good evening, PTB Nation. Welcome to episode 253 of the Place to Be Podcast. For those that saw a Night of Champions last night, certainly not. I think everyone knew going in it was not, you know, greatest card on the planet, but some surprises. I'm looking forward to seeing
it. It was a good storyline pay-per-view.
Yeah.
If you paid full price for it, I felt bad because it's definitely not worth the money you would have paid, but... No. For my $6 at the bar, it was worth going to check out.
Yeah, I agree.
And we will talk about that in a couple weeks as we get only 3 weeks away from our next pay-per-view, Scott.
Yes.
Battleground.
While
we're talking about that weekend, I meant to do this last week. I just wanted to throw the reminder out there for the Making Strides Breast Cancer Walk PTB-a-thon we have going on right now. Mm-hmm. And you get all the information on the live chats page. Basically, we're running a little contest, as we mentioned before. I will be walking to represent members of my family or friends that have been affected by breast cancer, and we are raising funds for that. And as a little bit of extra incentive for you, we are having a little contest. Winner will get a little treat from me, and the highest five donors will get to appear on the Survivor Series Old School Roundtable that will be coming up in November. So we've already had probably about 7 or 8 donations, Scott, including yourself, and I want to send out a hearty and healthy thank you to everyone. And appreciate the kindness, and it's a hot neck-and-neck race at the top, so you guys are going to come in strong if you want a shot at this roundtable or the prize, so just throwing that out there. So thanks again. All the information on the live chats page.
Yes.
All right. I guess we'll get right into business, Scott, then we'll talk about the website a little bit later and other things we got going on.
Yes. Fans have already come up to me today and asking if we're doing what we're doing tonight.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You Bobby Heenan in the airport all of a sudden?
Exactly.
Fans coming up to you everywhere?
Exactly, you know? Mr.
Hey,
Wilson.
Hey, what is going on here?
Isn't there like parent teacher conferences or something? Ooh, you still haven't aired this place out.
I should have, if I would have known this information earlier, by the way, I might have traversed over to TF Green Airport with our PTB Nation cameras. Mr. Michael Elgin has been stranded at TF Green Airport all day trying to get out of here after the Beyond Wrestling show yesterday, downtown Providence. So I wish I knew. I would have went down there and harassed him, try to get an interview, you know? Could have name-dropped Kevin Kelly and everything.
Yep. You could have complimented him on his fantastic hair and everything he might have been on tonight.
I could have said, you may know this guy. He's the co-host of the Place to Be podcast, along with myself.
Yes.
Kevin Kelly.
All right. What? Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, since you heard Tubby wanting to know why we're here. Two things tonight, JR. Two emotions that have racked the World Wrestling Federation over the past few months. Those emotions are not love, and it's not hate. It is both.
And that's about it. It's like 2 minutes of that song with awesome dramatic videos. So
yeah, pretty much. A couple shots.
It's a great open. It's a great open.
Yeah, a couple shots of Classy Freddie Blassie. I think is
Freddie Fellini.
Freddie Fellini. There you go. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault and the Place to Be podcast, we bring you SummerSlam 2000. Does the run continue, JR? We had a little hiccup at King of the Ring.
We've had two hiccups this year. The rest have been fantabulous. We had a great Royal Rumble, a great No Way Out, grand WrestleMania, great Backlash, great Judgment Day, pretty shitty King of the Ring, and an awesome Fully Loaded. So here we go. Trying to keep the streak alive.
Yes. almost in February. Doesn't feel like February here. Or where we are tonight in the Vintage Vault either. Mm-hmm. August 27th. 2000. Live from the Entertainment and Sports Complex in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Did you find this an odd choice for a SummerSlam?
The only reason I say no is because I think this building is brand new, so I think they wanted to.
I know Raleigh's a fairly big area in the grand scope of things, but not a very big, major city.
No.
And for SummerSlam, which is a pretty marquee show at this time, and I know they weren't really into the whole, like they are now, where it's in L.A. and whatever else, but I'm surprised that they went there and to Raleigh and not like Charlotte if they wanted to go to North Carolina.
Well, this is the third pay-per-view in the last 23. Last pay-per-view in the third pay-per-view in the last, 16 months that has been in the state. We had King of the Ring 99, which was in, I think, Greensboro. Unforgiven 99, which was in Charlotte, or reverse. And now here. So three pay-per-views since June of 99 inside the state. So,
and there's one match on this card that almost makes sense that it's here.
Yeah. And they don't do what they're supposed
right.
to do. why don't you give us a little background? Again, I'm pretty sure this is a pretty brand spanking new building. I know that it's obviously...
it broke ground on July 22nd, 97. Had just opened October 29th, 1999. Operated by Gale Force Sports and Entertainment. Project manager of the McDevitt Street Bovis Incorporated.
McDevitt like Jerry?
Street Bovis. capacity, 19,772 for basketball. 19,500 for concerts, tenants, the Carolina Hurricane, 1999 to the present, and the NC State Wolfpack. Of course, not to be confused with the NWO's Wolfpack.
Oh! And the Hurricanes, those pricks, had just won the Stanley Cup, I think. Or at least made it to the Stanley Cup Finals. 99? No. That would not be for a couple years.
They didn't make it till it was
06, I think. Yeah, 06, something like that.
Of course, the team that was formerly our beloved Whalers.
And exactly right. Peter Karmanos, go to hell. Your attendance.
Actually, they made 01-02. They made the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yes, they lost to the Red Wings,
I think.
01-02? Yeah, I think they lost to the Red Wings.
Detroit, and then 05-06.
Yep, they beat Edmonton. Mm-hmm. That was a battle of the eight seeds, I think, that year. I think they were both eight seeds.
I forgot Edmonton made the Stanley Cup.
That was former Bruin Sergei Samsonov was on that team. Then they hit the shitter after that. That's how they ended up getting who that fucking kid is that they drafted ahead of the Bruins drafting Sagan. I don't remember his name. Taylor Hall. I think.
Yeah, Taylor Hall. Yep.
Taylor Hall. Which all right, your like attendance.
A, it sounds like a like charm school. Not charm school. Boarding school. Dorm.
Charm school. How pretty you are. Well, it could be a woman. Your girl's named Taylor. your attendance.
I'll meet you over in Taylor Hall.
There's got to be a Taylor. Was there a Taylor on Dawson's Creek? There had to have been, no?
A Taylor in on Dawson's Creek? No.
Yes. There was no Taylor in Dawson's Creek. No. Seemed like there should have been.
Jen, Joey, Pacey, Dawson, Jack.
I'm trying to bait you into a Dawson's Creek podcast. I'm surprised we haven't had one yet.
I don't need to be baited, sir. I just need to be asked.
Maybe you and Miss Engel. She's pretty good.
She watched the show Creek. She watched. I'm going to have to hang on my own on that one. Oh, you know, I think Reese watched The Creek. No, was it Reese? There's someone out there that I know watched The Creek and seemed to know a lot about it.
My sister, she watched The Creek. All right, your attendance.
I'm going to drown 18, you in The Creek.
18,128. Somebody had to drown in The Creek on the show, no?
No, I don't think so.
Your buy rate, pretty good, 1.4. And your announcers, as usual, the voices of the Attitude Era, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. Any heat matches, sir?
Negative, sir.
Didn't really need them. Oh, you know why? Because they played the same video piece 3,700 times during Heat.
Yeah, this was... Had Heat started on MTV yet? I think it was right around this time it switched over.
What? DJ Scribble? Or Scrizzle?
What?
What an asshole's name was. DJ Scribble? Whatever his name was.
Thinking, what did he do? He did Heat?
Yeah, I think
you're
he
not thinking of DJ Ran, are you?
No, I'm not thinking of DJ. Okay. There's only one great DJ Ran.
DJ Ran, it's all up in your area.
That's right. I have to look that up now. In any event, all right, so
late
no Heat
2000,
matches.
It went to MTV. This doesn't have a date, though.
But it was close, though.
It was right around.
We're coming close. We're coming close to another sad moment in wrestling television history coming up shortly. Very
yes,
sad.
Yes, actually after this. Oh no, we go one more pay per view.
One more pay per view. Right? It was the night after. Night after our next one. So. Okay.
I went to Google. When did Heat move to USA? Mm-hmm. I mean MTV. And the first Google thing is when did an autofilled slavery end? That's odd. And when did the Titanic sink, Scott?
1914.
Well, you know, you can read all about the Titanic. It's on placetobenation.com. We missed the 90s.
Yes. DJ Scribble, my bad. He might have guested on Heat, but he was only on he was on The Grind, Total Request Live, TRL, Spring Break, Hip Hop Night, Millennium Special Live.
I see.
He appeared in the 2000 film Turn It Up, credited as just DJ. He was also a judge in the 8th Annual Independent Music Awards to support independent artists.
Of course.
So that's the scrib. Anyway, no Heat. Neither did he. So
it was September. Right. It moved as part of the deal. Stupid. Let's move on.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that next week. All right. Our opener, JR, we talk about a new group.
We do. How come?
Because we kind of alluded to them in...
Scaluted?
In scaluted to them in our last...
As Big Sal would say.
Yes. Scaluted to them... In our last show, but here, a very big deal. It kind of started back in June, but really. I love how they had to, you know, put a fire alarm in there.
I used to like, always think there was like an alarm going off in my house when that friggin' song came on.
All right. Well, let's talk about how this started. Well, the night after King of the Rings, we got to go back a couple months. The King, Jerry Lawler, representing his girl there, the Cat, and Dean Malenko representing the little she-devil Terry, faced off in a match with an interesting stipulation. The loser's valet had to strip, kind of dating back to when Shawn Michaels was commissioner back in, what was it, the end of 98?
Mm-hmm.
98, yeah. Well, Malenko lost, so Terry, who probably had no problems doing this, now here he was, Stephen Richards. When was the last time we saw him? When did we see the King of Swing last?
It's been a while.
Yeah. Anyway, he popped out from behind the curtain, covered her up with a big white sign with a red circle with a line through it. Very weird. Everybody was confused, but we just kind of forgot about it because it was stuff like that on Raw. We kind of like go over our heads.
Yeah. Well, you knew it was going somewhere. You just figured it would take a few weeks to develop.
In the following few weeks, Stevie, now Steven Richards, made his intentions clear. He was sick and tired of the immorality and filth.
Sick of it.
Big Von Erich word. That inhabited the WWF and decided to form a group known as...
The Right to Censor.
Yes. Cleaning everything up. Clean up the mess.
The
he immediately brought on one of your boys, B Squared. Bull Buchanan would join the stable.
Yep.
And a shocking third member would join soon after.
I loved this. On 727, well, actually, on the Raw before, Bull Buchanan defeated the Godfather and took his hose. Basically, they said if Godfather loses to Bull, the hose would be no longer allowed at ringside. That week on SmackDown, Steven revealed that he had converted the Godfather and turned him into the Good Father. This to me was like the best name change ever. I thought that was just fit, like really smart. I love that, the Good Father. Mm-hmm. So he changed his look, his attitude. He had the shirt and tie with the slacks, just like Steven and Bull had. He swore off all the hoes, all the sex, promised to bring morality and righteousness back alongside the Koresh-like Richards. On the 8-7 Raw, the newly christened Good Father unleashed one of the sickest power bombs in history when he crushed, well, WWF history, I should say, when he crushed one of his former hoes with a nasty powerbomb through a table that literally folded her in half. It was a really sick bump and really got the RTC some heat. They were for real at this point. Over the coming weeks, would add a couple more key members to the ranks. I like this, to me, at a time where it was tough being a real heel. There weren't a ton around in the world of wrestling. These guys were just real assholes that no one liked. I thought it was a pretty good shtick. Even though the root, the genesis of it was Vince being pissed off at the old PTC and El Parent Brazil. That was mainly in 99, though. That stuff had really faded at this point. Steve Allen playing the piano and everything else for that group. But here, Vince brings it back as a chance to kind of, you know, shove it in their face. And, of course, one of the hoes would go on to become a pretty famous female WWF superstar herself. We'll get to that later as well. But what did you think of the burgeoning of the right to censor, and what did you think of the Good Father?
They're both fantastic. You're right. I mean, thanks to the NWO era, thanks to the NWO in general, it was very hard to have good, solid bad guys. Guys that you legitimately hated. Not like, man.
Well, even in the WWF, like Triple H and Kurt, like those guys, they were heels, and yeah, they got booed, but they were liked by a lot of people.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about both of them later on. The crowd reactions to them are kind of surprising. Well, one of them anyway. Now, what's the one thing? Now, that made sense, because what was the one thing about this era that everybody loved?
Shades of Gray?
The T. Well, I guess a prelude to it 13 years early, but
50 Shades of Gray?
50 Shades of Gray and Black and White. They love the boobs. They love the half-naked chicks. And
okay, Daddy, it's on off.
Take that away. Oh, God. Go away. Maybe that's why it smells in here. That's why. The one thing that everybody liked about the Attitude Era, this group wanted to take away. Very Federation Era-esque.
Yes.
And that's what we need. You know, that kind of stuff was still needed at that point. You still needed some shades of how the old 85 to 93 way of thinking was.
And Stevie was really good in the role, too. I mean, we talked about it, you know, when he was on the show way back when. If you guys go check the archives, I think it was like August of 2011, just about 2 years ago he was on the show. And he hated this. Well, he didn't mind the gimmick, but he hated, like, physically how he was at this point. He thought he was fat and out of shape. But the gimmick itself, I thought was a good fit for him because he was a good speaker. It kind of accentuated his strong points, and I thought he did a great job handling this. Out of nowhere, he got thrust in this role he had never really had on the stage, and he did a good job, I thought, adapting to it and really articulating the whole angle and getting things over. He's a smart guy, obviously, so it was probably pretty easy for him. But definitely came across very natural. Didn't seem forced, and I liked the little touches he put into it as well.
Yes, and Bull, you know, nothing else going on, so might as well add him, but you're right.
Yeah, he was good muscle.
Yeah, but the Good Father was a tremendous idea. You know, the hose had not run its course. If anything, they were still, you know, hot, no pun intended, but
Godfather was, he was stale.
His character was
stale. He wasn't going anywhere at this point.
No, he wasn't going anywhere, but yeah, the myriad of chicks. The guys, you know, the fans didn't want to get rid of, but obviously to make them heal, you needed him to get rid of them.
Yep.
And that's exactly what they did. So tremendous job there turning him. And the alliteration of changing, you know, just one letter to change the whole thing was just superb.
Yeah,
they didn't overthink it or anything.
No, Good Father. So this feud comes about, of course, here they faced Rikishi and Too Cool. And this came about because about a couple weeks before the show, Steven and the RTC started really targeting Rikishi, saying basically the stink face and his bare ass was offensive and needed to be off TV. So that kind of led to some back and forth and different attacks and whatnot. And that cues up this match here. Mick Foley, commissioner, put Stevie in the match. Stevie hadn't really been wrestling But he made him team up with his boys here against Too Cool and Rikishi. So Too Cool and Rikishi actually lose here. Stevie pins Scotty Too Hotty. I was fine with that. I thought the RTC really needed the win. Kind of set them up as a legit heel stable. And Scotty's like, you know, him or Christopher can take that pin easily and not really matter. So Rikishi's the only one that you want to kind of keep strong here at this point.
You needed to have them. Oh, of course. It was a no-brainer. I mean, obviously, yeah. The faction had just started. You needed to keep them, you know, strong. And they seemed like they had some traction long-term because this was one group of heels that you probably wouldn't have gotten sick of just based on the atmosphere and the theme of the era. They would not, you know, fans would not have gotten sick of their antics. So, obviously you needed to get them started with a strong win. And, you know, opening the show was fine. Good slot for it. And the RTC, the Right to Censor, get started on their reign of terror of the mid-card.
Do you think this is a downgrade for Rikishi? Someone that had just been in that big IC title match at Fully Loaded?
Because
he kind of kept the little bit of the feud going with Val on TV until about 2 weeks before this. It's a weird build to this show because outside of the top matches, they really like turned the worm on this a lot. Like no pun intended. About 2.5 weeks before the show. Like until then, it was all a lot of the lingering feuds, and also they like flipped the switch and switched a lot of these feuds around and got them going for the show. But they kind of waited a while to get a lot of them going, I thought.
Yeah, and of course we had one that would be really out of nowhere, but there was a lot of reasoning for that, and we'll get to that. But yeah, I think that. I do think so because the players that were in the Intercontinental title storyline at this moment were no better than Rikishi per se, at least in terms of fan love. I mean, obviously work rate. We'll talk about them in a few matches. Obviously, Head and Shoulders is a better wrestler, I guess, on paper. But Rikishi was one of those guys that you could fit in anywhere, and you know, the crowd would get into him, and he was still fairly popular. But you needed to have kind of a sacrificial lamb of the title feuds to get this group over. You don't want to have Hey, what are you? We're complimenting you. We enjoyed this stable of heels. You were sticking your middle finger at Mr. Bozell. No problem with that. I think it was important to make sure that somebody that was over was suffering because of Right to Censor. You couldn't really put somebody in there who, you know, some faceless face. For lack of a better term, you need to have somebody that had some juice, that was really gonna, that the fans were really gonna get upset about losing to, and I think Rikishi was it. Obviously, the Intercontinental title would be siphoned off, and we'll tell you about that in a little bit. But I don't think it was a big deal. I thought it was fine. I understand because the players in the IC feud were kind of equal, maybe to a certain extent. So it wasn't. It's not like he was being punished. I find it kind of lateral just because the belt wasn't involved doesn't mean the storyline wasn't any less important. So I think this was a big deal for Rikishi.
Do you think he's losing any shine as a face?
No. Not at the moment.
Okay.
We'll talk about what happens to him, obviously. But no, I don't think so. I don't think so. Do you think he was – let me ask you this then in reverse. Do you think – where's that question coming from? Do you think he was overplayed at King of the Ring?
No, he was still over at that point, but yes, I thought he was completely overused at King of the Ring. Okay. That question is coming a little bit leading you in one direction that you know where you're headed, and the other is really just reading the reviews at this time and the results and even the show. It did seem like maybe they were kind of running out of ideas with him. Mm. It seemed like they looked at him as someone bigger than what he was as far as the gimmick. Like they thought he could be a legit guy, but that the gimmick maybe was starting to hinder him as being a serious threat. And the look.
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, I think the key point here is that he was taking a myriad of guys who were kind of floating aimlessly and really needed to put this storyline over and put these characters over. So I think it was a smart move. I don't think it was anybody else you could have put here. Let's pick a name. Let's pick a name of a mid-card guy like a Jericho. Why put him in here? And he's got so much more going for him at the moment. I think you had to have. I think Rikishi was the perfect guy to put in this role because there's really nothing going on with him. Yet he was still over at the same time. Everybody else had something more important going on. So he was a guy that could be sacrificial against this group. So and Too Cool is just Too Cool. Yeah. Nothing really going on there. So Right to Censor gets off to a big start. Their reign of terror begins with a win over Rikishi and Too Cool. Our next match, speaking of stale.
Ugh.
Ooh, God. I can't believe I'm saying this either. One of the standard bearers of this era finally has run out of gas. They started, of course, back in late August, early September of 1997. And have been on and off now for 2.5 years. But now I think it's finally time that the neon green has dulled on D-Generation X. Give us the background, JR, on the end.
Well, in between playing lackey for Triple H, Road Dogg and X-Pac decided to start up a little friendly competition, trying to outdo each other on all programming. The games began the night after Fully Loaded, when Road Dogg faced Steve Blackman for the Hardcore title, with X-Pac talking about the competition on commentary. After Road Dogg lost, X-Pac challenged Blackman for the title that week. SmackDown, X-Pac put up a losing effort, and both men attacked Blackman. The friendly competition continued, leading to both men each getting stink faces while the other laughed, but turned serious when they threatened to fight each other on the 8-17 SmackDown before Kane ended the tease and beat them up. On 8-21, Road Dogg was accidentally put through a table by X-Pac following a tag match, and later that week, Road Dogg walked out on his partner during a handicap match against Undertaker. X-Pac ate a chokeslam at Last Ride. To take advantage of this one-upsmanship, Commissioner Foley set up a match between these two at the pay-per-view.
Yep, and here we are. kind of sad. The swan song for one of the greatest factions in WWE history. Triple H is on his own, as we have noted. Billy Gunn is on the shelf, recooping. So these two are pretty much
Buddy
twisting.
Buddy smells what the Rock is cooking. It's me. Look how big my damn nose is.
It's over 2 years old at this point now. Could have brought him back. Had him referee this match or something. A little Jason Sensation action. So, you know what they decided to do? They decided to mess with each other. Friendly competitions between the two. Kind of brother.
Hey, Rock.
Me as Ark Henry.
I don't know what y'all cooking. Smells like
oh, my.
But I think I'll eat some anyway.
Oh, you cut off the the laugh was awesome. thank you. That was great. Fat Albert laugh. So they just kind of messed with each other, and yeah. Really nothing left to really do. Kind of one up each other, and
yeah,
it wasn't a bad little match.
Yeah, this was done.
Yeah, it was a slow death. At the moment, at this point in time, JR, who did you think had the brighter future?
Oh, X-Pac.
Yeah.
I mean, Road Dogg just, yeah. I mean, could you ever see him doing anything more than being Road Dogg, you know? Just like...
being Road Dogg.
I mean, it's a good gig, yeah. Whatever. He was fine in the role, but I didn't see him as any kind of future in that, you know.
Yeah, and obviously you knew when Billy was coming back, there was going to be no, you know, NAO reunion.
Right.
So
yeah.
That wasn't...
X-Pac, you could see, you know, he fit in better with a lot of the guys, a lot of the... flyers they brought in or technical guys they brought in. Basically, the high work rate guys. He could hang with them. Road Dogg couldn't.
No.
Did you think this was definitely the swan song when you saw this at the time, or did you think they were just going to kind of pick back up? Because, I mean, the DX stuff with Triple H, all that's done. They're just kind of hanging around on their own now, so they're still kind of clinging to the DX stuff, but they're all by themselves. Did you see this as the end?
I did. Triple H was, at this point, definitely past.
Yeah.
Past the colors at this point. And I think Billy had already gotten turned on twice, so I couldn't see that happening again. So, this definitely felt like the end. I don't think there's any doubt about that. This definitely felt like the end. And I was fine with it. Had a good shelf life. I mean, Jesus, JR, we're talking close to 3 years at this point, overall, going back to Hunter and Sean and Rude.
Would you have guessed that these two would be the last the last guy standing?
No. Absolutely not.
When it started back in late 97. So yeah. What was the best? I'll rank the incarnations. We'll call it the original. We'll call it the 98 kind of heel guys. Then we'll switch it and say the 98 face run. And then we'll say the rebirth.
Okay. I'll go 4-1. Number 4 was the rebirth in 99. Number 3, heel 98. Number 2, 97, and number one, Face 98.
Okay, I would go number four, Heel 98. I liked the Rebirth better because I liked how they meshed in with the corporation. I thought they were more kind of vicious in that stretch. So that's second. Okay. That's third to me.
Okay.
98 Face is second, and to me, the greatest incarnation of DX will always be the initial Fall 97 till WrestleMania 14.
The only reason I put the Face 98 just a tick above is because...
Because you're a mark for Triple H?
That too. But, well, no, I like Triple H in the 97 role too.
Okay.
But my point is, but what I'm thinking is they really carried, while the main event, while the ratings were rising in 98 and the roster was still a little kind of herky-jerky, they were kind of the glue that kept the mid-card together. Without them, I think there would have been a lot of more trouble in 98 than people think. Whereas, as much as I love Rude and Hunter and Sean, they still had other stuff going on. Taker and Brett and the Hart Foundation. And I think, not that I'm saying that if DX was gone, they would have... I think the Face DX in 98 was more important company-wise than Sean and Hunter was in 97.
Shit! I think, watch your fucking mouth.
Well, fuck me.
God damn it. Fuck.
I'm not saying they weren't funny. They were fucking awesome. But Sean could have been fine as just a heel without creating this faction, and it still would have been awesome. Whereas I think this Face 98, the Face 98 group from like June to you know, the end of 98 really kept the glue of the mid-card together, and without them, I think they'd have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I just would have rather watched the old 97.
Oh, I don't disagree. I'll watch any of it. I don't care. I have the original DX, the original DVD. It came with a T-shirt when they came back in 06, the one with Hunt, with Sean naked with the belt over his privets.
That was one. A T-shirt you got?
No, I... Yes. No, I... When they came back in 06,
mm-hmm.
and they had a deal. If you got that DVD, you got the old school original DX T-shirt free. And I never had that one. I had the VHS tape, and that shit the bed, so I needed a new copy. So
right, so the T-shirt has him naked or no?
No, the T-shirt was the original logo. You know, the original T-shirt.
Did you try and trade it in for one of Triple H naked?
Why would I want on a T-shirt? Because then it would eventually fade. Not my memories. But the shirt. No, it was just the... I don't know. They've never done a DVD cover. Never mind. The point is the Face 98 run was I think more important company wise than the 97 one was, in the sense that Sean could have stayed a heel,
right,
and been awesome without having to create the faction part of it.
Yeah, but the faction was awesome.
It was awesome, but the company was okay without it. Whereas in 98, I think the Face 98 group needed to carry the mid card. But we're splitting hairs here. They're both off.
Anyway.
Let's move on.
Nothing match.
Wait, so much about this match.
Nothing match. X-Pac wins, which is not a shock, since as the great CRZ notes, X-Pac never loses a singles match at this point. Seems to only lose tag matches.
Yes.
But all right. Yes, he is the winner there in the last man standing, the DX survivor.
Yes. Okay. Next up, our first title match of the evening. And as usual with this belt, it is not involving a one-on-one match. The World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship in a tag match. For the second time in 3 months, a singles title is defended in a tag match. Of course, we had the world title defended at King of the Ring in that fucked up six-man mess. And now we have kind of a similar situation. Your Intercontinental Champion, Val Venus, of course, successfully defended at Fully Loaded at JR in a great cage match. You and I, of course, praising this week. And his girl, Trish, have they been, they are now together. Not together, but she's managing him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's been managing him since, June.
Yeah. And here they take on former European champion and his mamacita. We're talking about Latino Heat, Eddie Guerrero and China. How did we get to this point, JR? It's kind of serpentine.
And by the way, Val Venus rhymes with penis, in case you weren't sure.
Of course.
All right. Eddie achieved two straight victories over Val on the 731 Raw and the 83 SmackDown, and China got a pin on Val on the 87 Raw thanks to Eddie. Of course, the title was never on the line in any of these matches, but the pinfalls were occurring. And this meant ending the feud with Saturn and Terry, and China never got a chance to rip Terry apart. So instead, she focused on Trish. On the 8-17 SmackDown during a match with Eddie and Val, Trish smashed a water pitcher into China from behind, knocking her out. Later that night, China demanded a match against Trish. Commissioner Foley obliged, but made it a tag team match instead, with Eddie and Val as their partners, respectively. On the 8/21 Raw, China confronted the commissioner later in the night, demanded Trish right now, and said if it happens tonight, or it doesn't happen, to SummerSlam. Foley said it won't happen to SummerSlam, but added that he'll make the tag match for the IC mat title, and China and Eddie were then cool with that.
I was wasn't crazy about this. I'm happy with an Eddie Val feud for the Intercontinental title, but throwing the women in here just made this kind of a mess.
Well, I felt like they needed to do something with China, I guess. She hadn't really done much, really, in the ring since the Jericho feud earlier in the year. She's just kind of been in Eddie's corner. So I think maybe they felt like they wanted to get her back in the mix. And she was already kind of I know it was a different time period, but she was pretty, you know, she was legitimized with the IC title division, even though obviously the competition is much stronger now. And Trish had come off a feud with Lita, and they were trying to get her in the ring a little bit more. So, I mean, I kind of get it. It's better than having two separate matches. I don't mind sticking them together. And Eddie and Val are good enough to kind of carry them. I was okay with it.
This is where I was starting to tire of the whole sticking the belts in just to cater to feuds rather than the feud catering to the belt kind of thing.
Well, they made it pretty clear that they wanted the title, though, with this.
Yeah. It was odd. It was just odd that, like, as a team, they wanted the Intercontinental title. I don't know. It was weird. The match itself isn't bad. Eddie still has his left elbow severely wrapped coming off that big injury that he suffered. We talked about when he first debuted back in February. But I remember watching it today. He was still very heavily wrapped. Eddie just hadn't quite yet found that top of the card potential yet. He was still he looked all right, but you could tell that it was incomplete. There was more to Eddie that we wanted to see, and that we just weren't seeing it.
Do you think China was holding him down, or do you think they worked all right?
No, I thought they worked fine. This was all him.
Okay.
This had nothing to do. No, his in-ring work had nothing to do with her. You could just tell that he was incomplete. As a mid-card guy in WCW, he was fantastic. And yes, I know he's in the mid-card here, but it was evident that they wanted more out of him. They were expecting more out of him. He was much more valuable to them for the future than WCW ever thought he would be. But just seemed like there was something missing. This match, I thought, could have been even a little better than it was. Having said that, I mean, we gave it about a 2.5 out of 5, which is probably kind of generous for a mixed tag.
Yeah,
Trish,
okay. Yeah.
Trish, did you think she was growing at all?
She was starting to seem a little bit more comfortable in general. Mm-hmm. But I can't say, she still didn't show any of the signs of becoming anything special.
No. But again, what the best thing they did was exploit it as part of the storyline.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. That was really well done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Anytime China was in the ring with her, they're like, oh, shit. Like, she had this look like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. And plus, China was just bigger.
Yeah. They booked her as being green, and they didn't hide from it. They didn't try and cover it up and pretend like she was good or ready. I mean, the whole storyline was that she's not a wrestler and she's being forced into wrestling. And that was the angle. So, yeah, that's a good point. I think that really helps kind of cover for some of that by making it, well, we know she sucks. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like Rocky Balboa. We know he's old. You don't need to be told.
Yes. So, having said that, we get a China pins Trish with a press slam. Well, I think the guys are brawling outside, if I remember correctly. Yes. And China gets the pin. Therefore, for the, what is it, fourth time in her career, China is your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion.
Pretty crazy, four-time champion. We'll see if this one is meant to be a long one or a short one. But, I remember being disappointed at the time. I was actually really into Val at this time. I liked the pairing with him and Trish. I remember being a little disappointed when he lost. And then even more disappointed that it wasn't to Eddie. But it made sense to have Trish take the loss. And I think this pretty much ends the Val-Trish thing. It may taper on just a little bit longer. But I think Val got fed up with her after this and dumped her. So, but yes, China's your new IC champ and her and Eddie on top of the world for a moment.
And quickly about Val, similar to the Good Father, Val, I liked him in this spot too. He needed to get out of that role of porn star because that was just getting kind of tired out.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he would be going off in another direction,
mm-hmm.
even more so from where he is now. We'll talk about that. But yeah, I liked Val as well, and I was sad when he lost, particularly the way that it happened. And China went with the belt was just stupid. But I know where they were going with it, and we'll also, you know, a lot comes out of this show. Storyline
and the haircut helps Val a lot.
I agree.
He had stupid looking hair. Like, he didn't even have good long hair. He had like that stringy curly crap that
it looked like it didn't fit. It
was an odd look. It didn't.
Yeah,
he looked much better with the crew cut.
So there you go. China is your new World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion. Somehow.
China.
All right. Next up was. I have to say, I after watching the video pieces earlier today and kind of thinking back, I actually was entertained by this little feud going on with the announcers. Let us know how JR and Jerry got into this, into SummerSlam.
All right. Entertaining backstory to this match, Taz began openly mocking JR's past medical problems and current state of his partially paralyzed face. At one point, he even hobbled down to commentary table with sunglasses, a cowboy hat, and a cane and pretended to be blind. On 8/17 SmackDown, Lawler was ripping on Taz, telling him to be ready for the pay-per-view, and Taz popped out of the crowd and locked on the Taz mission. Now, just to back up a little bit, Taz had been acting like a bully. If you remember, he had been fucking with Rikishi, costing him the IC title at Fully Loaded. That continued for a couple weeks. And then he turned his attention to Jim Ross, because JR had said a couple nasty things about him on commentary. Taz got in his face. He said he would smack JR's face, but God had already beaten him to it, which was a pretty dick line, but it was great. JR was going to hit him, or he slapped him once. Taz dared him to slap him again, but Lawler stepped in and punched Taz in the face instead. So came to JR's defense. To me, this is really, too, when the JR and King relationship took a turn from, like, kind of antagonistic to more, like, the veteran duo announced. And it's more when at the end of 01 when King comes back, but I feel like this is kind of where it starts, where up until this point they were always kind of fighting, but here I feel like they become like friends that bicker.
Yes. Yeah.
After this.
Yeah.
This kind of like brought them together.
Yes, I agree. And it was actually very well done, because it could keep Jerry just rooting for the heels without having to kind of be a heel. I wish he would do that more now. But I loved Taz in this role.
All right, well, let me finish, because we actually got a little bit more.
Oh, okay.
Now, the 8/24 SmackDown, we come back from break, and Taz is tagging a car with the number 13 spray painting it. You see, it says, being from New York, I'm used to spraying stuff. Hey, Lawler, does this car look familiar? Lawler recognizes it as his rental. Maybe you ought to get in the ring and get a closer look. Is this your rental car? Is this what you said? Everything's funny, right, King? Everything's a joke. Watch out, Joe. Here we go. Funny man. So Lawler says tagging his rental will upset Hurts. Not him. I don't give a shit. Well, I'll tell you what, Happy. Let me ask you this. Is this funny? And the camera pans over, and we see the passenger in the car is good old JR. And Lawler's pissed, and Taz keeps mocking him. He threatens to split his head open like a watermelon. Ross closes the car door, locks it. Taz makes fun of him, grabs a pipe, and smashes the window. Lawler runs back to check on JR, and we come back from break, and JR's got glass in his eye and his blood everywhere. And then Taz comes out after it, attacks Lawler as he's checking on JR. So, Taz was a bitch, an asshole, and of course that play-by-play comes from Christopher Robin Zimmerman, CRZ/wrestling.com. I hated this at the time. I thought it was like such a waste of Taz, because I was really pissed at the way Taz had fallen off since January. I hated the bulldog little gimmick. And then he came back and he was looking like a badass for a little bit, and then realized they really had no direction for him. He was just interfering in Rikishi's matches. there was like nothing to it. There's no reason for it.
Right.
He was just doing it. So I hated this. I'm like, great, now he's feuding a Lawler. This is stupid. And then, by the end of this match, I hated it even more. I wanted to punch a hole in the wall. Not really. But watching it back today and reading the results of the shows and watching the video build up, I'm with you. It was actually pretty entertaining. I thought Taz really took to this role, and it was kind of made for him. He's a good talker, and he's just an asshole. So it really fit, and King and JR did a nice job of feeling overmatched at the same time making it feel like Lawler could hang with him based on his history. And I thought JR did a nice job in the match, too, putting over King's background and his legitimacy to really get the newer fans that may not know him kind of over with that, because we hadn't really seen that yet in this run. right. of like 99, 2000. Lawler hadn't really competed much, so we didn't really get a lot of that build to see, you know, how great he was or let the fans know what King, you know, Jerry the King Lawler used to be. So I thought they did a nice job with that. Did you feel in any way that this was like a legitimate match, or did you look at it as Taz an announcer?
No, for Lawler, anything Jerry's in at this point, I mean, he was still, you know, he wasn't old, but, you know, he could still go in the ring. Look, I agreed with you that I wish Taz was in a better spot, but you know what? This is better than not being on at all, you know, or, you know, the hardcore thing had run its course. I'm glad they gave him something to do. I mean, it wasn't great, but it was better than nothing. So I was happy with him at least getting a payday on the second biggest show of the year.
Were you pissed that he lost this match?
No. Well,
I was.
Yeah,
I don't care that they cheated. I don't care that he used the candy jar. And I forgot that they actually hinted that it was their plan before the match. They referenced the candy jar and they said they have a plan.
Yeah.
Reminiscent of Mack Truck and Lord James Brown at Holiday Slam Fest, the plant. But yeah, I still didn't like it. I thought you just rebuilt Taz as this thug, this bitch, this dick, this bully. And then you have him lose to an announcer and another announcer. I don't know. He looked cool. Remember, he no-sold the pile driver. He got right up after the pile driver, and I thought from there he'd just choke out Lawler. But then this should have made it a DQ. They should have JR hit him with a candy jar and do a DQ if they wanted to wait and do a rematch the next month. I didn't think Taz needed to lose here to the King. We didn't really need a happy ending in this match.
No, not really. I think he needed to keep pumping up Taz because he could have. This could have led to more things. But I don't think they had any thought with Taz at this point about that. I'm sure he was kind of upset that he wasn't back at the ECW at this point. I'm sure the pay was better. At least the checks didn't bounce.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. But, he's probably like whatever at this point. But
I think there was already inklings of him in a future role with the company, even at this point.
Yeah, definitely. So, I think so.
So, and of course, that doesn't take form until the following year. But Lawler wins. JR smashes the. There was a lot of broken fake glass in this month of
yes.
August. Broken water pitchers and candy jars and. Mm-hmm. A lot of stunt glass in the month of August in the World Wrestling Federation. All right, next is a match that I actually was very excited to watch, excited for. Believe it or not, two of your favorites.
And I always forget this wasn't for the title. I always forget that IC title was in the mixed tag and not here.
Right. No, we have a match before this. There's a match before this. Are we confusing matches here? There's a match before the one that you're thinking of.
Okay.
We are one match before for the hardcore title.
Yes. I'm sorry. I skimmed down too far.
Yes. The hardcore champion.
I'm always surprised that this was the hardcore title match.
I am so upset that you have.
I even had the song queued. You think I would have known?
Blew his match off.
I know. Well, I even had the music queued. Like I should have. It was looking right at me. I should have known.
I'm gonna tell him that you blew. YouTube blew.
I scrolled ahead too fast.
All right. So before that match, which is utterly fantastic, we'll give that time. The World Wrestling Federation Hardcore title is on the line, and this JR was equally as entertaining, but for different reasons than the one coming back. All right. On the 8/21 Raw. So the go home Raw before this show, Mick Foley, who was all over the fucking place, forced Shane McMahon, who was, you know, getting punished for his evil doings throughout the year 2000, to take on that guy, where the man who JR and CRZ are co-presidents of the fan club, yeah. Steve Blackman, in a hardcore title match. Blackman was the hardcore champion. Punish him a little bit for, again, the 2000 evil doings. Well, thanks to interference from a bunch of guys, two of them from that veiled faction that never happened, and another from a tag team
I always thought it never happened, but they actually did kind of happen because they were together like all the way through the build of this. So they really were together for about 2 months. It seems like it didn't happen because you kind of forget about it, but they did a lot more as a unit than I remember them doing.
They did a lot together, but they didn't have that DX or like faction feel.
No, I kind of liked it better that way. I liked that they were just like loose associates.
Yeah, associates. Business. Anyway, TNA, Edge and Christian your tag team champs. We'll talk more about them later. And the use of a kendo stick, Shane O'Mac steals another belt. Remember, he stole the European title at the beginning of 99, and here he becomes hardcore champion. Did that piss you off? Not me.
No, because I knew it was heading to something better. I didn't think they were going to keep the belt on Shane. And I actually liked the scene right after when Mick Foley goes in the back and basically when he realizes he has to now face Shane realizes he has to face Blackman at a rematch at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. Shane gets all scared and lays down and begs Edge and Christian to beat him, and Edge and Christian land the great line, double gold, and they start shooting to see who would get the pin. And Foley, I think like Edge lays down on him or whatever, and Foley starts to count. Stops and then says, you know what? I don't like the 24/7 rule, so I'm suspending it for now until after SummerSlam. So now the match is back on, the rematch here.
And that is final. It was great. I love
and if
that.
You remember then, Blackman was invited to the Christmas party. He was in the Secret Santa, got the gift he didn't like, got all pissed off, didn't want to be there. And of course, backstage, the real reason for this feud is that Shane and Blackman were actually good friends.
Yes.
And Shane wanted to get him over and help put him over on a big stage show. This feud really didn't start. Another one that didn't kick off. I kept reading the results, waiting for it to start, and it seemed to be really just it. You know, 2 weeks before again is when things kicked off. But I thought it was cool. I thought Blackman was booked really well as hardcore champion. Always a step ahead everyone. Always turning away all the challenges. And I thought he did a really nice job in this role, and I thought this was a good spot for him to be in. Especially Shane had been pretty high profile over the last 2 months.
Yes, and you know, this is also a storyline to continue. Highlighting and accentuating Mick's run as commissioner, righting the wrongs, if you will. So
is the 2000s a year of two halves. You know, the first half was all the heels in charge and screwing over the faces and everything else, and now the second half is Foley kind of getting revenge for all those guys, and now the heels are on the back. They're back on their heels.
The heels are on their heels. Yes, I was looking forward to this match because as we know, Shane O'Mac, like we do, this is going to be incredibly entertaining, and he was going to do a lot of sacrificing of his body to make this very entertaining. The match is great. Better, I don't say better than I thought, but I realized, wow, I have to legitimately grade this for what it's earned, and it was a 3-star match.
Well, Shane would. I mean, the one thing is about Shane is he'll always put the effort out.
Yes,
and he put the effort out, especially for a guy who likes in Blackman. You knew he'd go all out, so this was really well done, I thought. And Shane took all the bumps, and I guess we got to talk about the big one. So at the end, they brawl over. TNA gets involved again. They brawl over to the staging. Shane climbs way up on the scaffold. Blackman chases after him, starts whipping him with the kendo stick. And Shane just takes a crazy bump, flying off the scaffolding all the way back to the staging below. It was it was crazy. I mean, it was a long drop. And that awesome wide shot they did of him just cascading through the air was out of control. And then Blackman tops it off by diving on top of him with an elbow and picks up the win. So I'm kind of torn on this one because, I've kind of been of the belief that we didn't need this kind of stuff. Especially after, everything that happened in 99. Like, I still feel like it's still fresh enough that we didn't really completely need a fall like this.
Right.
On the other hand, watching it today, it was pretty spectacular. I mean, they did a hell of a job framing it, and it was, it's probably safe as a fall like that can be. I thought they did a nice job, and I thought it really put Blackman kind of in a good spot here. Especially with him following up with the elbow. Like, I feel like if there's ever a time now to push him, this would have been it coming off this match. Like, this was a highlight reel move, and Blackman could have just climbed down and pinned him, but the fact that he dove off after him really made him look like a badass, too. So I thought this was really kind of a cool spot and nicely done, and I wish they would have capitalized more off of it with Blackman.
And I was thinking to myself that, I was kind of tiring of Shane at this point. I mean, we always talk about way too many McMahons. And at this point, I'm like, all right, well, maybe this is finally now the time for Shane to kind of take a spell and let the real talent kind of step to the fore. So I thought this was a good opportunity to get Shane out in spectacular fashion. So I had no problem with it. I think it was time for him to move on and, go off camera a bit, kind of like Vince.
Really? You think so?
Well, I mean, he's been on a lot. I mean, he's been on almost nonstop since, pretty much since February, really. Well, even before that.
Yeah, but I feel like he's only been the man for a while. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's really since Vince left now, he's really kind of been the guy. And I don't think he's overshadowed anyone. I really like Shane in this role. I liked him the year before as the guy, and they shunted it quickly and brought Vince back as a heel. But I like it again here. Mm-hmm. I thought they did a really nice job.
I do too, but I thought now this is a good time to let Blackman be a legit. You know, let all these heels kind of go on their own now and earn their keep without needing Shane to kind of lean on them. And
I just thought Shane was really good at this point, and I thought he was still fresh.
Okay.
I mean, he's really just been a character for not even a year and a half. And I know it's a lot of TV, a lot of pay-per-views, but he was off for a while too. So, I mean, he was off from December to, you know, February, took that a few months off. But other than that, he's, I don't know. I didn't think he was as run down as Vince was at this point.
Mm. Well, Vince hasn't been on for a couple months now. And,
right.
You know, maybe it was, I also think that it needed getting Shane off camera kind of legitimized Foley. I mean, Mick was working so hard to clean up the riffraff and,
yeah, but the cool thing was they were pretty clear about Foley's role. So they weren't really saying, like, Hunter and Stephanie and Shane were, like, in charge anymore. They were just, like, characters now. They were just heel characters. And Shane would show some stroke, but he was really just kind of being a manager at this point, which I thought he was good in the role.
Yes, he was. He was. I wish – I don't know. I'm torn because I think it would have been nice maybe to kind of just be a manager and not deal with the hierarchy storyline part of it. Mm. But part of me is like, it would have been nice to see him off camera. In any event, this was a good match. And, you know, once again, Shane does what Vince does. He would not expect – he expects his talent to do what he would do himself. And, you know, was the spot bad timing or poor taste? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was.
Well, I mean,
the fact that it's a cool spot doesn't take away from the fact that it was pretty stupid to do. I just don't. There's no benefit to it, really. I mean, you have Shane doing it, first of all, so it doesn't really gain much there. Second of all, it's in a middling match with 2 weeks of build in the middle of a card that's going to be forgotten, especially with the match that was coming up two after this.
Maybe they could have gone halfway up instead of all the way up.
Yeah, it was just it was just unnecessary.
Yeah,
it was unnecessary. I mean, it was, you know, it's that extra scoop of whipped cream on your Sunday. You really need it? No. Tastes good, but it's probably bad for you.
It's that last Gansett at Picasso's.
Yeah, that last Gansett.
Chicken and broccoli pizza.
That last Gansett does you in every time. So
chicken and broccoli pizza Sunday night?
Oh, yeah.
Ah. How are the nachos?
Okay, but once you've had boneheads, you'll never go anywhere else.
Well,
nachos.
That is true. The bonehead.
It ruins everything else.
The buffalo nachos are absolutely incredible. And that annoying Cena guy with the fucking Brady jersey.
He was back.
Ugh, God. Well, at least it went on.
No, instead I had to watch Mr. Flanagan sulk over his Giants.
Oh, yeah, that one of the worst fourth quarters in probably in team history. And no Taker lady, huh?
I don't know. I'm getting a little bit worried.
I know.
Hope she's still alive.
Remember, he's not on as much now, so she probably doesn't invest herself to going there and standing around waiting for a table because she's dumb enough to get there at, you know, 7 o'clock.
With her little weird husband-son guy.
Her own Paul Bearer. So, all right.
Okay.
Okay, so Shane loses and Blackman wins back. What do you see? Do you and the CRZ get royalties for making sure the entire theme plays?
Always. Always.
All right. Next up is... Oof. Wow. This was two guys who, at this point, I mean, such a short window of WWF career. I mean, one guy's been here a year. The other guy's barely been here, what, 6 months?
You know, it's funny, too. I always think this match had the IC title on the line, but I always forget that it didn't. I always forget about that mixed tag match from earlier.
Yep. The battle of, as our PTB alumni, Scott Keith, called them, the Canadian Chris's, Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho. Already wrestled each other in matches three times this year on pay-per-view. They were in the triple match with Kurt at WrestleMania.
Yep.
Then they fought for the IC title at both Backlash and Judgment Day. Both matches excellent. And this one was certainly excellent as well. This one was a best 2 out of 3 falls. And this was just two guys who fucking hated each other, period.
Yeah.
Give us the background.
Well, they kept attacking each other. A lot of anger. Mm-hmm. 727 SmackDown, Benoit attacked Jericho following a Jericho victory over Benoit. Slammed his garage door onto his stomach, followed by a chair shot to the head, causing Jericho to spit up blood and putting him on the shelf for a couple weeks. He returned on 8-7, interfered in a world title match between Benoit and The Rock, and cost Benoit the title. On 8-10, Jericho demanded Benoit in a match and fully agreed, but said it would be at SummerSlam. Over the next few weeks, they kept interfering in each other's matches, costing each other titles galore. On 8-17 SmackDown, it was announced the match would be 2 out of 3 falls. And on 8-24, in one of the highlights of the year, Jericho embarrassed Benoit with a montage where Jericho will fight Benoit, including the ring or a boat or as a jackass. They wrestled later as a 6-man tag and put each other through tables, and that brought us here.
You know what it looks like? That jackass picture? The mane of the horse looks like he's got this gigantic mullet.
Yes. One of the few times the Photoshop stuff actually wasn't annoying.
Yeah, it was very funny. You're a big jackass. I was talking with our good friend Johnny Reckless earlier today, and I said to him, I'm going to just give you a topic and roll with it. And so I texted him, and I simply typed, Benoit, Jericho, 2000, go. And we talked extensively last night. I was letting him know that we were doing this tonight. And he said to me, two guys, two hungry young lions who wanted to prove that they belonged. And just put him in the ring and let him tear the house down. Let me word exactly how he texted it, because he worded it so well. I gotta find it. But he made a great point.
Fire up the TI-83.
Okay, two young lions. Give us a shot.
Willy Wonka computer.
You stole fizzy lifting drinks. Give us a shot. Give us a shot. We'll tear the house down. The new guard had arrived. Jericho's fast-paced hybrid style versus Benoit's brutal technical precision, and that's exactly what you had. Jericho was one of those guys who could kind of fit into anything. Benoit was very Brett-ish, very Brett-like, Brett-ish. And very dynamite-like, of course. He was a very crisp, no-wasted motion, precision striker. Jericho was more of a kind of an aerial hybrid where he used his body to off the top rope and, you know, off the apron, things like that, but would find a good way to blend into whatever his opponent's strengths were. That's why these two were awesome together. Mind you, both guys sort of came from the same cloth. Both trained necessarily in the dungeon. Benoit was in the dungeon. Jericho was trained by the Hearts, but not exactly in the dungeon. He was in their little camp. But he pretty much got the basis of the way the Hearts worked, and as did Benoit. Oompa, loompa, doompa-dee-doo. I've got another puzzle for you. What do you get when you look like Rotella?
Oh, God. Hunchback over and your hair falling out. Quick, Scott gets your old flip phone. Send him a transmission right now.
Can what he is he wearing Saturday?
Can he even stand up straight?
What will he wear Saturday?
How high are our Mento socks?
And those sandals. With a Red Sox shirt.
Put on our Mentos, members only coat.
Wow, that worked. That was great. We could keep going with this. So, really, it just came down to just put these two in and let them just pummel the fucking If you are wise, you listen to me.
What do you get when you're fucking a car?
Walking and crooked as a... something. Walking like you're drunk, but you really are not. Don't slip any vodka in my beer right now. Maybe I will walk straight. Okay. So you just took these two guys and just let them go at it. And that's pretty much what it was. And let me tell you something. No holding back. It was 13 crisp minutes. At this point, you knew that both of these guys were pretty much the standard bearers of the future. I mean, they were the guys you were looking at. I mean, obviously what happened at the last pay-per-view was no fluke, no one-month accident or one-month experiment. These guys, both these guys were slated for huge things. And, you know, the way this was positioned on the card, kind of upper, closer to the end. And Benoit, the slick little shit that he is. And you know what's funny? Even when Benoit was a heel in WCW when he was with the Horsemen, you never really saw him cheat, per se.
That's a very good point.
Maybe the Horsemen helped.
Yeah.
But seeing him actually hook the ropes on the last fall was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, it's something you never really saw before. Like, wow, this fucker just cheated. He never does that. He's just a ruthless scumbag. But, wow, he actually, like, cheated.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
you
I
never
like
saw that out of Benoit. Yeah.
It was cool because it really showed, hey, these guys are dead even. Mm-hmm. And he had to do that.
Yep.
To win this. You know, that's how even these guys are, that they went one fall apiece. And I like the strategy, too, with Jericho submitting and tapping really immediately 3 minutes in, and they put that over on commentary, basically like, hey, you know what? Suck it up. Forget it. And live to fight another fall. Don't worry about it. And then Benoit goes right back to the crossface.
Yeah,
and Jericho gets the ropes.
Too.
Yeah, Jericho gets the ropes. And then Jericho gets the walls, and Benoit does the same thing. He taps. That sets up the final fall. But I agree. I thought that was really shrewd. He cheated, but it was like smart cheating. Like, he knew they were pretty much wrestling to stalemate. So Benoit steals the win. And yeah, I thought this feud has elevated both of these guys. This was a great capper to, you know, what they had gone through earlier in the year. I thought they were evenly matched. They fit well together. They beat the crap out of each other. And it was just a fun brawl for 13 minutes. And not even a brawl, just a stiff fest.
Yep.
They worked well together, and it was definitely one of the selling points heading into the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think it should have went longer, or did you like the kind of crisp 13-minute pace?
No, 13 minutes was fine, because they needed, and even though the next match didn't even go as long, I was fine with it not lagging too long. It kept it tight. It kept the pace very frenetic. I had no problem with the length. Sometimes 20-something minutes doesn't fit. As great as you want, as great as these two guys were, and really it'd be very easy to say, oh man, it would have been great if this was like 25 minutes. Yeah, probably. But give them less time, and they got less time to do things. And you're talking about two guys who won't go too fast, so the match looks sloppy.
Right.
They didn't do that.
They work a controlled pace.
Exactly. And that's what made it fantastic. No, I wouldn't have. If it was longer, I'd have been fine with it.
Right. I liked this. Three falls tucked into 13 minutes at the pace they worked at. Whereas the two falls, you know, it wasn't like a Survivor Series style thing where they eat a clothesline on a roll up and they get pinned, you know, 3 minutes in. It told the story well, that Benoit trapped him in the crossface, and that's a move you can't get out of. So why suffer and try and fight it when you can just tap and reset? Like, it wasn't like he got him with a dropkick to the knee and pinned him or something stupid, you know, like they do sometimes in these matches or in Survivor matches. I liked very much that they did it the way they did it.
I agree. And kind of the way that they kind of borrow the booking from Hunter and Rock from Judgment Day.
Yep.
You know, kind of like, you know, all right, well, I got one more pin. I have this one in my pocket. I'll just use it, and then, you know, I'll get the other one back. So I love the confidence. You know, and that just shows the quiet confidence that these guys have. You know what? I'm confident enough that I'll let him tap out. I'll throw him a bone on this one because I know I'm going to win two in a row. And that was a great philosophy by Jericho. And more would come from them. And the capper would be at the beginning of the year. But we'll get to that. We'll get there. But that was a great match. Fantastic match. Sad thing is, it wasn't even match of the night.
No.
And I was reminded of the awesome brawl outside in the hallways of the Dunk when they slammed each other into the Providence Bruins locker room door, which is pretty awesome. And
I was there.
Yes. That wasn't the go home, right? It was a couple weeks before.
Yeah, it was a couple weeks before. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good compliment to the build to that match. So I'm surprised you didn't go to Worcester since you weren't in school.
I know, right? One time I actually went to Providence.
Good crowd. Do you remember it?
Yeah, that's one of those ones that's fallen off my radar a little bit. Like, obviously, the Worcester one I know well, and the first one I went to in Lowell, as you've may have read on PlaceToBeNation.com, my documenting of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember those like the back of my hand. That one in Providence, I remember, we'll get to what I remember most about it later, but overall, the whole package, it just seemed like a pretty just straightforward night. I remember the I remember taking the picture of me and Jim walking back, and we did the DX pose. I have that picture proudly still. I had my Kurt Angle shirt, and he has DX shirt, and we were posing outside like some garage warehouse or something. So I think it was just me, him, and Mr. Adam Murray went to that show.
Mm. It seemed very, very fitting that you would have the T-shirt of the fresh, energetic new guy, and Jim would have the T-shirt of the stale, boring, worn out aspect.
Makes sense.
I got a Raw coming up, our next vault. I remember a Raw that I went to in Hartford, I think it was early September. We'll talk about it the next vault. All right. Speaking of great matches, if anything could cap... We're sure in the mail.
No, we're not.
I knew. I was waiting for it. What do you get with
too much...
It
might have to be this year's theme.
Yes.
With too much Grey Goose.
Richard and the Mailman. Where are the pickles? All right. If there was any match on this card that could better that one, it's this one. The World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships on the line. And after we saw these three teams, JR, a few months earlier out at the pond, how do you amp up from that?
I don't know. So forget it. We won't even talk about it.
All right. The mailman knows.
A lot of the build for this came on 8/14, right here in Providence, Rhode Island. Gee, during a match between the Hardys and the Right to Center, Edge of Christian came out, brutalized Matt Hardy with a chair, ending with a Christian Unprettier on the chair. Edge of Christian out again with two belts and two chairs. They stand up the chairs in the ring and sit down. They say, actions speak louder than words. You saw our actions, our hero words. We're here for one reason only. Due to the unfair treatment we've received at the hands of the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Mick Foley, we are totally out here to stage a sit-down strike. I want you to see what we're talking about. They showed footage from SmackDown when they're brutally attacked by both the Hardys and Dudleys. Mick Foley does nothing about it, just like the people in the city do with their lives here. Nothing. Very sad. They were handled a bucket full of heinosity. Edge and I, says Christian, took matters into our own hands and did to poor Matthew Hardy what we had to do. Mick Foley comes out, says, "Hey, Edgester and Christian, I thought we had a relationship, and now you come out here and hurt me with these hateful words. I watched you and your heinous acts against all the people that you've attacked, including even Lita, and that lacks testicular fortitude." So he says, "You will not have to deal with the Dudleys or Hardys interfering in your match at SummerSlam, because you will be facing them in a TLC match. Tables and ladders and chairs, oh my! Tables and ladders and chairs, oh my! Tables and ladders and chairs, oh my!" That was the chant, of course, that started up. The three teams that beat on each other with table shots and concertos to set this match up. So the Edge and Christian have really been the chair guys, chair specialists. The Hardys, of course, were the ladder specialists, and the Dudleys were the table guys. So mm-hmm. Kind of fit well to have those three weapons, these three teams, which they've been using, you know, as their weapon of choice, in here with the tag titles on the line just months after Mania. And now this was interesting because I can't remember who it was. I want to say it was Reese or Morse. I forget. Who said this, Matt? Do you remember who said this on the SummerSlam Roundtable, was that this match was overrated? I'm sure it was Ben, and he's going to bitch that we don't ever remember what he says. But
no, I thought it was Reese.
Or he's going to bitch that we're accusing him of saying it. One or the other. He'll be bitching.
I want to say I think it was
Reese. I'll get an angry tweet tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was Reese. Basically saying it wasn't as good as Mania, and they didn't need to do it again. And I was kind of surprised, too, that they did it again this quickly. And I wondered also how they could top it. And I know that WrestleMania was just a tables match, but they basically used all the weapons, too. What were your thoughts heading in? Did you think it was going to be able to top Mania? Were your expectations high? Were you thought it was overkill?
Well, I thought that, look, it was evident that these were the three best teams of the year. There were some good other teams on the roster. And we have been pretty much pumping up throughout the entire calendar year of 2000 that the tag team division had not been this good in probably since, you know, 90, well, actually further back than that, probably like, you know, 88, 87, 88, 89. I think that they needed to be headlined again, and I had no problem kind of amping it up another level. I had no problem with it. The Dudleys have kind of been kicked to the curb pretty much since losing the titles at WrestleMania. I think they deserved an opportunity. And remember where this show is. We're in the, you know, deep in Tobacco Road, Mid-Atlantic country.
Yep.
So you know, obviously the whole premise was that the Hardys were finally going to get their moment because they seem to be the ones that constantly get screwed.
Right. Oh, yeah. I thought for sure they were walking out of here with the titles.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
I was absolutely convinced of it.
Yeah.
And I was surprised when they didn't. I loved I liked the end when Lita comes out and does the whole thing where she, you know, screws over Edge and Christian because they had beaten on her a few weeks before. And that's when I thought the Hardys were definitely going to win. And then Lita takes a nasty spear on the floor from Edge. Her head smacks the ladder when they fly back.
Yeah.
And a lot of big bumps. I thought there were bigger bumps here than at Mania. Bubba takes that one off the ladder and goes through like 10 tables. Matt takes a gross one back bump off the ladder down through a table. A lot of big bumps. Edge and Christian end up stealing the titles and retaining. And I was definitely surprised that they kept the belts on them. But I was glad because they were really great. Great heel team, and the dominance continues, but I was definitely shocked. I thought this was a golden opportunity to get them off of them.
Yeah, I mean, they had been on a roll. I mean, it was clear that they had established themselves at this point as, you know, as the team, and I think the other two teams are the ones that probably needed this a little bit more, but, yeah. It didn't happen, and I was a little surprised, to be honest with you, that Edge and Christian won again.
If you remember, too, it was during the summer. Edge and Christian were doing the great kazoo
yes.
playing. Remember, they had had celebrated at Kurt Angle's birthday party, and they were playing different wrestling themes. They were doing My Time for Triple H, You Think You Know Me, You Think You Know Me, You Think You Know Me, theme from Kurt Angle. And then the combo song with Mick Foley, the theme from Chris Benoit. Chris Benoit is here, and he's really mad. That was good stuff. Sorry, just wanted to get that out.
All right, get out. Get out.
Oh, come on, relax, man. I can play your music, too.
It's my time. It's my
get out. Get out.
That was always awesome.
Do they have the Benoit one?
Let me see. Oh, that's that again. That was that plenty. Let me take a look. Okay, let's see. Let's see. So, while I'm looking that up, did you think the Dudleys got stiffed here, though? I mean, ever since they lost at 16, they were like really shunted.
Yeah, they've done nothing. No, I don't think so. I think their time's coming again, but I think this was Edge and Christian's year. I was glad they won it. If anyone's going to win here, it would have been the Hardys in their hometown. I thought this has just been Edge and Christian. They were great champions. They were great heel champions. You were dying to see them lose, and we'd get there. But I liked that they stole the victory again, like they did. And that's been their whole routine.
Yes.
Kazoos and streamers.
Oh, streamers rule.
Yeah.
Long live the stream.
Yeah,
long live the zoo.
Hey, listen to this. I'm going to play our music.
You know me.
All right. Get out. I can play your music, too.
It's my time. It's my
get
time.
Out.
It's
get
my
out.
Time.
Listen, I'll play your music for you. 2, 3, 4. Angle. Angle. Angle.
Guys.
Cripes on Friday.
You think you know me.
That it? No Benoit one?
No Benoit one. Did Kurt say Cripes on Friday?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They were locked in at that point. There's a lot of funny stuff. I loved the friggin' parties and all that.
Oh my god. Guys, Cripes on Friday. I forgot about that. That was awesome. I have to look it up. I have to look up the Benoit kazoo. But the Dudley seemed to have gotten lost in a shuffle, and they had some pretty good bumps in this match. Devon takes actually both do. Bubba Ray takes a nasty one through two tables out on the walkway,
mm-hmm.
And then Devon he's hanging from the hook thing or whatever the thing that holds the belts, and he lands hard on his back.
Yep.
Matt Hardy goes through two tables. It was, I will say this though, whoever, if it was Riesch who said it at our round table, it felt more spot festy than the one at 16 did.
It definitely did. But I will say this, too. You know, it at the time, very overplayed out, a lot going on. But watching back now, man, what a spectacle. Like, the crowd is insane the whole time. Like, standing, buzzing, and just wild, you know. I mean, I get it. But it was, it did feel maybe a bit quick. Maybe they should have waited till Mania to do the second one.
Yeah, I mean, again, we gave it both.
Oh, it was still a great match. It was still a 5-star match. I mean, there's no debating that. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah. Still destined to find the Benoit.
That's okay.
I don't think we're going to find it. I'll have to look it up. All right. So there you go. Edge and Christian retain their World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships with a fantastic TLC match that, if you want to say it's a notch below 16, you can. I think you're split. To be honest with you, I think you're splitting hairs. I think they're both just fantastic matches. And, you know, and you're not going to be disappointed either way. So there you go. All right. We've had a myriad of spectacular matches. I mean, we've had three straight now, over 3 stars, the hardcore match, the 2 out of 3 falls, and the tag match. So why don't we take a break, kind of compose ourselves, get the Oompa Loompas out of the room, because we've got a couple of stinkers before we get to our main event, which is going to have a lot of more music than you can ever imagine in our main event. However, a word from our sponsors, followed by a word from Place to Be Nation. Because...
No, we're not. That is fine. Of course you had to play that.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
She likes it! Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Oh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance. I'm Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunderlips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Now, if you want nonstop old school NWA discussion, getting back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu. And there they are, the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day, there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to the return of the hack, you've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts. Of course, besides Chad Parr, we have Grapple Talk, the fans podcast, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and the Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, check out the news and the great forums at twfnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, Attitude Era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. So check out all there is to see right on twfnews.com.
You think you know me?
Hey, this is Headbangers Fracture, and you're listening to Where? What the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast. So you better not miss it. because I'm on it.
I'm looking forward to everything.
All right, Nation, we are back here. Place to Be Podcast reviewing SummerSlam 2000. You heard from our sponsors as quickly at placetobenation.com. Big things popping as always. Our 2013 fall TV preview continued today as Todd Weber checked in looking at a few ABC shows, Meet the Goldbergs, or The Goldbergs, forget the exact name of it, Trophy Wife and Back in the Game, House of Horror, Jeremy Nichols looks at Tremors from the year 1990, TJ McClune in the Sports Half Hour interviewed Jay Clemens today, Night of Champions live blog, me, you, Brad Woodling did that last night, you can check that out, relive the show through our eyes, Vintage Vault Repost, Survivor Series 88, interesting show, Scott, we put up that review and you can listen to the podcast as well up there, Titans of Wrestling is up again, Parv and the crew, the round table, James, Kelly, Pete, and Johnny Sorrow. Too many Johnnies around here. Johnny Reckless, Johnny Sorrow. July to August 1979, they moved on to in the WWF. Good stuff. And another great podcast came up, too. Wrestling with the Past, Episode 3. Will and Charles are joined by various members from ProWrestlingOnly.com. Our buddy Grimace, remember him?
Oh, my God, Grimace. Old school.
Grimace is on here. Celebrating Bret Hart, the career of Bret Hart. So they go all through his career. If you're a Bret Hart fan, I highly recommend that podcast, Wrestling with the Past. Those guys from PWO know their shit. And I promise you, you will not be disappointed if you listen to that episode celebrating Bret Hart. All our weekly reviews are up as well. Matt Petticord, SmackDown, Your Impact, and Your Raw, My Ring of Honor. Also, the five count we did, top United States champions. Mm-hmm. Big Collabo, me, you, Kyle Warren, Ben Morse, Duncan. Mm-hmm. What else was in there? Was Reach in there?
No. Weber. I think it was just the five of us. Maybe there was one more. Rogers? No.
No, Willie. Willie was in
Willie.
It.
Willie, yes, D. Willie.
We did the favorite U.S. champions. Mm-hmm. Favorite U.S. champions. So
not our not who we think was the best.
Right.
But favorites. Our favorites.
Also, if you're a music fan, Parv did a guide to David Bowie's albums.
I was excellent.
Yeah, he was really in depth on that. So if you're a music fan or you're a Bowie fan, check that out. Very deep look at his anthology.
Yes,
Off the Top Rope, all your other podcasts, Grapple Talk Radio, all the favorites are there. Chad Campbell, even though the show is past, if you're into CMLL or Lucha, he did a really cool 80th anniversary show preview. And, you know, you can go back and read that even though the show already happened. It kind of caught you up on what was going on. And finally, also, make sure you check out our power rankings for week two. Week three will be up Thursday morning. NFL cumulative power rankings for PTB Nation. So that's what's going on at the Nation. All big stuff coming again this week. And including all the podcasts, all the columns, all the regulars. We'll have the Hard Traveling Fanboys. Hopefully, should be back this week. Hopefully, wish a speedy recovery to our buddy Nick Duke.
Yes.
And that's it. So let's wrap up that portion and get back to our show here, SummerSlam 2000, Scott.
That was a quick note, though. It's nice to hear Grimace's name again.
Oh, yeah.
One of our original tape trading buddies.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Way back we go.
Wow, we had some. Oof. He used to cry. I've never seen a guy cram so much stuff into 28-hour tape.
Yes.
Jesus, God, it was like 48
matches.
Much of
my Grimace collection.
Yes. It was very good. You and I did some writings of that. That's like the lost writings. I think you and I did some write-ups on a couple of his tapes somewhere down the line.
Yeah, a cool guy, Grimace, and that whole PWO crew. We actually had a little bit of something coming up with them. We'll get to it at the end of the show. A little announcement.
Yes. Yep. All right. We had three straight fantastic matches at this summer.
Let's make it four.
We like the gimmick here, and we like the participants.
Captain kind of Bill.
Huh? oh, boy. It's good to see him Saturday.
Oh, I can't wait. I want him with the candy cane on the elliptical again.
I'll have to get a little Beirut action. All right. The Cat. We mentioned her earlier. She was part of the beginning of that Right to Censor storyline. And Terry, also involved in that. Right to Censor storyline, faced each other in a stink face thong match.
Yeah, so this is a match that was made popular originally in WCF, carried on here. So this was a match, a feud where they were really pretty much just being catty and bitches to each other. That was pretty much the genesis of the feud. Kat has Al Snow in her corner. Terry has Perry, who she's been managing. And nothing. 3 minutes, they brawl around, and Kat picks up the win. So I say we move on. Nothing going on there.
I agree.
Besides Waller fapping over Kat in his fucking seat.
Yeah. Both looked awesome. They looked incredible, both girls.
Yeah, I was glad Kat was back to the blonde. Although I guess she's been blonde for a while, right? She just had the black for a little bit.
She just had the black for that little bit when she was with China. All right. Now, we go as quickly with this match as we did with one before this.
Well, we don't want to talk about the feud.
Yeah. All right. The first time since...
this is a mess.
Jesus. April of 98. Well, I mean, they did fight in October, but that
and
was...
And November.
Prefab. Yeah, it was more of a prefab shitstorm. The brothers butt heads.
It's gotta be Kane!
Yes, it is. And Lord only knows why. All right.
All right. This match was originally planned as Undertaker versus Big Show. Show had been out since Judgment Day after losing to Shane McMahon. Show made his return the night after Fully Loaded as a mystery opponent, along with Lita, to face off against Shane and Stephanie. Show chased Shane over the arena, chased Shane back to the ring between a match between Taker and Kurt Angle. Shane unintentionally got involved. Taker was about to chokeslam him, but Show entered and begged Taker to let him have Shane. Taker obliged, but Show turned heel and attacked Taker. The trio attacked Taker again backstage, and Shane nailed Taker's leg with a cinder block, taking him out of action. Show basically just said, hey, you know what? I turned on Shane back in the spring, and I became a big, fat, fun-loving goof and lost my killer instinct, so I'm going back with Shane. So Kane wanted revenge on it for his brother, because Taker was now out. Show would take Kane out twice. He put him through a table on 7/31, and choke slammed him through a hole in the stage on 8/3. Taker made his return on 8/7, scaring Shane so much that Shane thwarted Taker by jumping on one of the Raw signs on the Titantron. Show followed Taker to the stage, but Taker prevailed using a chain wrapped around his neck and throwing him off the stage. That ended up taking Show off TV. On the 8/14 Raw, Kane made his return after being taken out. Came after Undertaker, who had just wrestled Chris Benoit, seemed to be saving his brother, but instead turned heel, chokeslammed him twice, and with the second one, Taker went through the canvas and then rolled off. Kane rode off on Undertaker's beautiful Titan motorcycle, as they always said. A week later, Kane again laid out his brother and drew blood with a chair shot. So, out of nowhere, Kane turns heel. And him and Big Show now fighting over the mantle of most turns, as they're both crazy at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, the reasoning is, and Scott, this was the story I was telling you was memorable from that Raw I went to.
Mm-hmm.
In the kind of the burgeoning days of the internet, there was a lot of buzz buzzing around that crowd that Big Show had been demoted down to Ohio Valley Wrestling for being too fat. And it turned out to be true. That's why they wrote him off and had Kane turn. And now Show would be off TV for a while. So he was gone, came back, and they were not happy. And it was pretty much a weekly occurrence that Jim Ross would call him out in the Ross Report. Remember, he would always say, well, if he ever got a shape, he'd be a legitimate, you know, star.
Yes.
Taking like, these veiled shots at him.
Yeah.
And this is one for the Kevin list I'm interested in talking about. So Show... I guess what I don't get is, I guess maybe they wanted to punish him and take him off the pay-per-view payday, because I don't get why they didn't just have him do the quick job on the pay-per-view and then get
yeah,
away.
Exactly.
Maybe, so there must have been some motive that they really were pissed so much that they didn't even want him to get paid here.
Yeah, I'd have to say that's the reason. Otherwise, right. Why don't you just job him out in a few minutes? Yeah, just job him out in a few minutes and get it over with.
But they should have just, I don't know. There's no one else they could have put in here besides Kane. Like, they had to turn Kane again.
And all he says is, I attack my brother because I'm a monster.
Yeah, it was stupid. It was so stupid.
Which is about as credible as, I'm going to win the Rumble because I'm weird.
I'm bizarre.
I am bizarre.
I'm going to win this Royal Rumble tonight because in tonight's Rumble, I'm going to win tonight because I'm bizarre tonight in this very Rumble here tonight.
In this very Rumble tonight. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's so stupid. You know what this match, and according to your comments, you know what this match was?
Cut. He's going to win the Royal Rumble. Yeah, the British Bulldog. I've got a history in Royal Rumbles. And tonight, I'm going to remake history by winning this night's Royal Rumble. Tonight, because I'm bizarre.
I have a history in Royal Rumbles. Yes, I've been in them.
I have a history with Royal Rumbles. I checked the sexual transmitted disease status, and the history is clean.
Tonight, in this Rumble,
I will be good in this Rumble because I'm bizarre in this Rumble tonight. History says so.
It's 6.5 minutes of running around the outside of the ring, chasing each other, and then Taker starts ripping Kane's mask off. Why the fuck he was doing that, Lord only knows. And they keep running around, and then Kane just walks away.
Oh, so stupid. And then JR at the end is like, I don't think the match even ever started. I never heard a bell. All right. So, yeah, Taker rips his mask off. That was the whole match. He was trying to get revenge by ripping his mask off, and he finally does. And Kane covers his face and walks off. Just fucking stupid. This whole thing is stupid. I don't know why they even bothered. I don't know why Kane had to go heel. I don't know why they had to have this match. They couldn't even done a tag match, maybe Taker and Kane against someone. I don't know. They could have found some other reason to have Taker on the show somewhere and not have to turn Kane in and throw the stupid feud together. And just I don't get, you know, find Big Show then. Just find him. I don't know why you had to completely punish him. Just friggin' take him off the show, find him, or have him job on the show and don't pay him. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, make him work for free. Instead, you sacrificed your show for the sake of this. You know? Just stupid. Absolutely stupid. Fortunately, we forget about it, move on. Although Taker just gets worse. At least Kane looked like he was in shape. Taker was looking a little portly.
Oh, that fucking awful jean vest.
Jean shirt, which is like fucking 50 sizes too big. Yeah, this was not a pleasurable time for the dead man, or whatever the fuck he was. All right. Let's get off the two-match-in-a-row stink fest and move on to some real action. Ugh.
Ugh.
Let's Oompa Loompa our way through that.
Taker's has been
just awful.
Ugh.
Do you think he actually liked this gimmick?
Yeah, because I think it let him be more himself.
But at the same time, he lost a lot of the invincibility of the gimmick. Of the other gimmick. Now he was just kind of a regular dude.
Right.
But, you know, if that's what he wanted.
Well, that's something, again, we'll ask. I mean, look, he obviously liked it because Taker ain't doing shit if he doesn't like it, probably, at this point. So we'll ask Kevin about it. But I'm pretty sure it had to be something he was behind because I don't see him not... I don't see him just going along with this complete overhaul of his character if it's something that he wasn't completely on board with.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Time now for our main event. And
hey, PTB Nation. It is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
Vincent Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan WCW update. If Maritello will stop fucking up the music when I try and come on the show, Jim Duggan's still doing nothing in WCW. Chris Colo, what's going on?
VKM, I've been looking forward to talking to you all week.
Oh, yeah? Why's that?
Because there have been tweets, and there have been touts, and there have been all sorts of feedback from you and Claire and your fantastic duet last week.
Really?
Yes, fantastic. Unbelievable.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it. I like when the ratings come in. I like when the Nielsens are in our favor. Yep. And you know, Chris Colo, like a good businessman always does, I always like to tease. Next week... VKM's sitcom / drama show rebooking returns. Well, this time we inch into the 90s. Next week, right here on the Place to Be podcast.
All right. There'll be no naked Mr. Belvedere?
Well, I didn't say that.
Oh, okay.
He is around in the 90s. Lynn.
Yeah, that is true.
So what's going on? What are you up to tonight?
You
clanging and banging still, Chris Colo? Banging the chicks and clanging the bars?
I am indeed. I went earlier today. I'll be going in the morning. And BKM, how was your weekend?
Well, how do you fucking think it was? We had a pay-per-view, then we were out partying until 6 in the morning? Out in that godforsaken town we were in?
Where were we?
Huh?
Detroit.
Detroit? We're in Detroit.
You could have been partying in Detroit. They have no money. They can't throw you anything.
That fucking, awful.
Closed.
Awful, burnt down husk of a town. I met some scrubs, some bald-headed scrub with glasses, talking about Andre the Giant, pacing around, burnt down town. It's awful.
Yes.
I went to the Motown Hall of Fame, Chris Colo.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, they honored me for my performance last week.
Wow. Very impressed.
Chris Cola, I read some news today. Very sad.
Yes.
Let me see if you read this, because I heard you're quite the aficionado for this promotion. Mm-hmm. TNA Impact being taken off the road to cut costs, considering Orlando and Las Vegas as their homes.
Well, they've already been, I don't know where they're going to go in Orlando. They already lost their home. So, I don't know.
Chris Colo, can you think of another failed promotion that suffered its death, crumbling death in Las Vegas?
WCW.
No.
No, you killed him in Florida.
That shitbag AWA, remember?
Oh, yeah. The showboat.
Those losers crumbled in Las Vegas. I forced them out of Minneapolis. And only that jackass Parv was there watching. Drowning his sorrows in cheap fucking Binion's beer. Watching the showboat.
He always wanted to know why you never wanted Jerry Blackwell.
Begging for autographs of Buddy Rose, that fat pig.
They had a lot of porkers in that AWA. What were they growing in Minnesota?
I don't know. Ask Armento.
Yeah, that's true.
Chris Cole, I fear TNA may be on the way with AWA to the wrestling graveyard.
I don't know. Does that mean you're already putting in a bid for the footage?
It may be, but it also means I have a little memorial song queued up for them.
Oh. Well, everybody was crazy last week. They're going to be crazy this week. Please,
all right.
Enlighten us, VKM, with your Requiem for Dixie.
All right, Claire, fire up the karaoke machine. Here we go. These eyes! What, Claire? All right, hold on, back it up. These eyes! Cry every night for you. These gigantic arms long to hold you again. The hurting's on me, yeah. But I will never be free. No, 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 baby, no, no, no. You gave a promise to me, yeah. And you broke it. You broke it. Oh, Dixie, these eyes. Watch you bring your own world to its end. Not even Bret Hart would accept a job and pretend. The ratings are for me, yeah. You will never hit a 3.0. Oh, 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 oh. You took the vow with me, yeah. You spoke it. You spoke it. These eyes are crying. These eyes have seen a lot of love, but they're never gonna see another one like I had with you. Fine, Brian. These eyes have seen a lot of love, but they're never gonna see another one like I had with you. Flying Brian. Flying Brian. These eyes have seen a lot of love, but they're never going to see another one like they had with you. All right, Chris Colo, I'm out of here. You can bury that promotion and stop doing those insipid reviews that no one reads.
You're the best we can.
I love you, baby.
Suck it.
Fuck Kojak. I'll rip him off anytime I want. What? I got it wrong? Well, then he can't sue me then. Look at his stupid cigar. What kind of name is Telly anyway? Is that a fucking... What are the Muppets named Telly? Fucking Telly Sabaro. Is he in charge of the pizza place in the mall? I'm kind of hungry now. Armento, pull the limo around. We're going to the mall. Rotella, I swear to God, if you take more than 3 free samples at the Chinese restaurant, you're in trouble. Yes, Claire, you can get Subway. We don't all have to eat the same thing. That's the beauty of going to the food court. We can each get separate meals and then meet back at a table in the middle and watch Cox 3 in the middle of the mall. We cool? All right, let's roll out, Pussy Posse and Armento.
Fits all over the map tonight.
Wow. Let's hope that, you know, Nesson doesn't have 15-minute technical difficulties the last time he was looking at the mall. The last time Cox had the mall going. Who did he say? Frankie Sabaro? Interesting.
Wow. Yeah, that's a news bit today. Also, looks like two more people are leaving. Nikki James. She wasn't even... Is she the champion? No.
Yeah, she is. Isn't she? I thought she was the knockout.
She was the knockouts champion, but in the taping after the live no surrender.
All right, we won't spoil anything.
So let's not spoil anything. Anyway, she's gone. Well, they spoil anyway. And Mr. Anderson, of course, was getting the shit beat out of him at No Surrender by Bully Ray, and there's rumors his contract's up, and he's not going back either. Oh, boy. Maybe I'll have to forget all the bad things he said about WWE the last the last 4 years. And
wait, who was that? Who did you say?
Anderson.
Oh, God. I don't want him back. All right, we got big things popping here we got to get to.
Yes. All right, time now for our main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. This is, JR, you and I are at an emotional crossroads here.
Open your flip phone, make me your wallpaper. Not a big fan of Chris Brown.
Oh. Chris Brown? No, that is not Chris Brown. And Chris Brown won't shut up either. That's not Chris Brown either. All right. Sure, a lot of emotions going on. No, Chris Brown is, I think he was like 2. Honestly, he probably wasn't even born when that song came out.
Will you stop?
Oh, come on, Mr. President. Even you knew that song. Sad Eyes by Robert John, 1979. I'm running out of the 70s, JR. We're actually going to get up to a decade of where you may know the love songs. Quite interesting. All right. A lot of love. A lot of other stuff going on here. More than just the title.
Mm-hmm.
Give us the lowdown on how we got to this point.
Give you the lowdown on every little hoedown.
Exactly. A lot of hoedowns going on here. What happened to get us to this point?
Holy fucker nuts. All right. The potential breakdown of the Triple H and Stephanie marriage began on 7/27 SmackDown. Triple H was teaching Trish some of the moves for his tag title match or tag team match later in the night. Stephanie walked in and Trish was bent over, Triple H behind her in the Criscolo position. Stephanie threw a major fit. This enraged Hunter, who tried to explain it. Was all a misunderstanding. This all reads just like you guys would. Tried to explain it was all a misunderstanding, but to no avail. Walked out of the arena in anger. He apologized on 7/31 Raw, and the two seemed to have reconciled. Later on in the night, Triple H was showing Stephanie some moves when he accidentally called her Trish. When he accidentally called her Scotty C. Time to play the game.
Bitch.
Steph got pissed off and walked out of the arena. On August 3rd, SmackDown, Triple H and his wife, along with Kurt Angle, were booked in a 6-person tag match by Commissioner Foley against Lita and the Dudley Boys. Hunter, Steph, and Angle ended up picking up the win after the match as Triple H was leaving the ring. Angle and Stephanie hugged in a victory celebration, which annoyed the game and marked the beginning of a feud that had been simmering for a while. Mm-hmm. If you remember, actually, it was all the way back to December when Stephanie was first showing a shine to Kurt and pissing off Triple H.
Yes.
So this thing's been building for quite a while now. So, on August 7th Raw, Kurt Angle asked Commissioner Foley to be the number one contender for the world title at SummerSlam because Benoit had lost his rematch with The Rock. Foley told Angle he would take his request under advisement. Later that night, Triple H made the same request, and Foley told him that Angle beat him to it, but he would take both under advisement and determine who would be the man. Later in the evening, Stephanie called out both Triple H and Angle and tried to settle the feud between them and continue business. Foley made an appearance, attempted to keep the wedge between Angle and Trips. Foley then announced a number one contenders match between Angle, Triple H, and Chris Jericho to determine who would get the SummerSlam title shot. Both Angle and Triple H pinned Jericho, making them co-number one contenders. That week on SmackDown, Foley made it official, a three-way for The Rock's title at SummerSlam. The following week on Raw, Angle, Triple H, and Shane were booked in a six-man match against the Dudleys and The Rock, with the stipulation that if Angle or Triple H walked out of the match, they would lose their title shot. Shortly after, Kurt met Stephanie outside the arena and gave her a kiss on the cheek and brought her an umbrella because it was raining. Triple H confronted Stephanie about it, and they had a fight, and Steph left again. Later in the show, Triple H and Angle were called outside and a limo pulled up. Shortly thereafter, both men got out and Vince McMahon showed up out of the limo, making a surprise appearance. He told both men he doesn't care who becomes a champion, but if he hears Steph crying again, neither will want to even be near the WWF, much less its champion. That was a cool cameo.
Yes, perfectly.
During the match, Ed and Christian interfered by attacking the Dudleys. As a result, Angle, Triple H, and Shane triple-teamed The Rock to end the show. The week before this show, Stephanie defended her women's title against Lita in a pretty hot match. Unfortunately for Steph, Rock was a special referee. She tried to hit Rock with the belt, but Rock hit her with a spinebuster. Lita hit the moonsault, and she won the women's title from Steph. Later in the week on SmackDown, Kurt and Stephanie teamed up against The Rock and Lita. During the match, Steph got taken out, which drew out her husband. Triple H and Kurt would bicker about who would help Steph, and Hunter finally prevailed and helped her to the back, leaving Angle to get beaten up by Rock and Lita. Hunter came back out, and he and Kurt continued to brawl with The Rock, eventually the Hardys as well. Angle was tossed in the ring and headed backstage as Hunter got laid out by The Rock. And then the moment that we had been waiting for, since the flirting between Steph and Kurt started at the end of 1999, courtesy of Christopher Robin Zimmerman. Backstage, Angle catches up with Stephanie and sends away the EMTs. Stephanie, are you okay? Are you all right? I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it. I swear I didn't mean it. I really care about you. You don't realize how much I care. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Steph. I care about you. I really care. Angle hugs her and then plants one on her lips. Stephanie fights it at first and then kind of relaxes and gets into it. Angle backs away with a big grin on his face and Stephanie kind of gets the what have I done look and then we fade out.
That was a lot. Amazing how this storyline is literally 9 months old.
Time to play the game!
That bastard!
Now this, I mean this was big stuff, like this storyline was on fire. The female demographic was up, really buying into this thing. Earlier in the night, we had the tease with Stephanie getting the makeup by Janet, put on by the makeup lady Janet. And she said everyone's talking, and she kind of played coy. Stephanie was playing coy about it and was like, well, who's saying stuff? And, you know, basically still kind of teasing that she maybe still had a thing for Kurt, even though she was denying it with Hunter. And Hunter was very steadfast in his desire to stay with Steph and being pissed off that Angle was getting in the way. And I thought, Scott, during this match, The commentators were clearly sowing the seeds to be behind Triple H in this thing. They were really ripping Angle for getting involved in this marriage, splitting up the marriage, getting in between Hunter and his wife. Mm-hmm. And it was clear they were trying to make Angle the heel during this match. Did you get the same vibe?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Kurt was a cradle, or not cradle robbing. home wrecking. That's what I meant to say. Home wrecking lech for coming in and destroying their lovely marriage, which was
the HGH hand that rocks the cradle.
Yes. You see, exactly. You know, this wonderful, lovely romance that started when she was drugged in Vegas. But anyway, we don't remember that part.
Yeah, right.
There was no doubt that JR and King were skewing towards you feeling bad that Triple H, the husband, was getting, this guy was flaunting his wiles into his wife's direction, and she was stupid and didn't realize
it. And the build was really well done, I thought. It evolved naturally. And you built and built, and they were really smart to do that kiss right as the last show before the pay-per-view faded out, just to make you really, really want to see the show.
Yes.
And see what was going to happen. And with the title on the line as well, just a lot of stuff. It almost felt like Rock was like shoehorned in here, though, didn't it? Like, it almost felt like he didn't even fit in this match.
Yeah. Like, Rock, you know, it was almost like this was between Kurt and Triple H, but let's throw the title in here just, you know, because we need a title in the main event.
Yeah, exactly.
Should they have had these two?
No.
On their own and Rock had something else?
Not yet. I don't think they were ready for it.
Okay.
We just got the big moment where they kissed.
Yeah,
like, we had to still get that fallout before we get the match.
Right. That's true. By the way, that kiss was played on Heat. DJ Scribble and all for pretty much the full 60 minutes before we get to the fucking
It was big.
Yeah.
And they were on fire. I mean, they really, this storyline was carrying them throughout these shows. Like, it was everywhere.
You could tell that they were trusting Kurt big time.
Oh, yeah. And it was headed in one direction. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think it was played up as Kurt really loved Stephanie? Or was he always had this little bit of a coy, sly smile, like he knew he was doing it just to get in Triple H's head? How did you take it?
I took it that he actually had a thing for Stephanie.
Okay. So you didn't take it as he was just doing it to break them up and fuck with Triple H?
No, I don't think so. I think he legitimately wanted Stephanie.
Yeah, and we'll get to that way more in depth next month.
Yes.
A lot more going on. So this match itself is interesting because Angle takes a pedigree on the table and gets knocked out cold. Trainers take him to the back, and it ends up being a one-on-one match between The Rock and Triple H for a while. And then we cut back, and we see Stephanie talking to Kurt and begging him to go out there and help Hunter. And he says, you know, I'll do it just for you, Stephanie. I'll do it only because of you. And he comes back out. The match continues before Rock eventually pins Hunter with the Rock Bottom and the People's Elbow to win the match, and then he beats up Stephanie after. Do you think, and this is one I definitely want to ask Kevin, do you think, was that Angle stuff planned? I know the concussion obviously wasn't, or, you know, getting knocked out wasn't planned, but was he supposed to still leave on the stretcher? And because that whole thing with Stephanie seemed pretty preset.
No, I think...
You think they winged that whole thing?
I think they winged it, yeah. Because he didn't even get the pedigree off.
Well, no, I know that, but...
No, I think they winged it.
So you don't think he was supposed to pedigree him, knock him out, leave for a few minutes, maybe not as long, and still have Steph beg him to come back? It just seems like they
throw it together pretty quickly. Like,
yeah, maybe
Steph
maybe,
do the whole, you know, do this for me, and it fits so well in the storyline. Yeah, somebody that came up with that on the fly. Yeah, maybe it wasn't supposed to be, you know, I mean, the match is...
20 minutes.
20:09. And I would say, I mean, it wasn't that early into the match. It was probably, what, about 6 minutes in?
Yeah, he was probably gone for a good 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, he probably left about 5 minutes in and came back about 15 minutes in. And, yeah, maybe he was supposed to go out and maybe not as long. Just didn't seem like it. It seemed like he legitimately got knocked out and you know, they
Well, the angle thing actually happened before Rock even came down. So I don't think it was even 6 minutes in.
Oh, wow. That is true.
Because remember, they brawled for a while.
That's right.
And then Rock came down, and they fought. It was a very disjointed match. It was a tough one because the angle was so geared towards we want to see what's going to happen with this couple and Angle. And now what are we going to do with The Rock and the title? I don't know. It just kind of got in the way. But I stand by my point that I don't think they were ready for the one-on-one match yet.
Probably not.
So it was almost like they just had to deal with this. They had to just suck it up and...
Suck it up and go with it.
Yeah. But, I mean, it made sense. These guys both fit in the title picture. They didn't feel like shoehorned. No one seemed to give a shit that they were fighting for the title because they wanted to get to the Stephanie stuff. So it almost felt like a little anticlimactic with Kurt being gone for 10 minutes and we'd just go back to Hunter Rock again, which we've already seen 25 times this year.
Right. However, you almost want to say to yourself, thank God it was the two of them because...
right, they could book
two guys who didn't have good chemistry. Yeah, those 10 minutes would have been a fucking shit show. So you're almost glad that it was two guys who had legitimate chemistry working together and were able to carry. You know, maybe they weren't supposed to go on as long,
right?
But you're I'm starting to like your way of thinking on this, JR. I do think that maybe Angle was meant to get. Was to be taken out, but
it just fits the storyline so perfectly that he would do that for Steph and go because the whole thing she had been spending all those weeks trying to convince him and Hunter to work together. You know, they finally he's like, "Fine, I'll go do it for you," kind of thing. So
yeah, yep, I agree. That's a good point. And like I said, at the end, Rock wins, retains his title, takes out Stephanie, And then Kurt comes out, got back, grabs Stephanie from the ring, leaves Triple H there out, carries her, and then turns and has a look. And JR's got the, I've got your wife. I got your wife, by God. So, and then we're gone. Does that match? Let me ask you this. Talked on the round table about, you know, a couple of people thinking maybe this show was, oh, that was the match that was overstated.
Yeah.
But we didn't talk a lot about, and a lot of people think maybe it takes down the grade of this show. Would have been better off just having all three of them go beginning to end, skip the thing in the middle, Stephanie still comes out. Could you have pulled that off if it was all three of them? Or do you think the whole Kurt getting taken out and going in the pack had to happen?
Well, it helped keep Kurt and Triple H apart a little bit. I don't think it had to happen. I think they could have done it the same. It made sense that it happened, but I don't think either way was a big deal. I think there was enough intrigue in this storyline that it didn't matter.
Hmm. I'm starting to think that was all intentional now, that was a plan, maybe not as long.
I'm thinking he was supposed to get knocked out from that pedigree in storyline.
Yeah, but not be gone. I mean, he was gone a long time.
Yeah. We'll see, though. We'll definitely have to ask Kevin about that one.
Yeah.
So there you go. Rock retains, pins Triple H, keeps his title, and kind of moves on and leaves this love triangle alone. But we'll hit this more next Monday night.
Yes.
With Unforgiven, because a lot to talk about. So the show as a whole, very, very good.
Yeah,
definitely an easy A-. I mean, the TLC was great. The Jericho-Benoit match was a lot of fun. A good hardcore brawl. A lot of good storyline action. A lot of good build to the show. And just the main event. So while it didn't completely deliver in the ring, everyone was just so interested in where they were going with it. It was really just the peak. To me, this is like the absolute peak of their mainstream coverage. They were on, even though Heat wasn't on MTV yet, they were getting a lot of coverage. Like, remember the Dudleys were on, like, the summer, wasn't spring break, but whatever, like, the summer show, like, at the pool at the beach was. And I remember there was a lot of hype for the show before on, like, MTV and different other mainstream sites. And they were just really, really red hot right now with this whole love triangle stuff. So, a lot of peak time for them, success-wise. And just a great show they delivered. And, again, we're back on track after that crappy King of the Ring. We've had two great shows now in a row.
Yes, the mid card is working, is going on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
Kudos to Benoit and Jericho for just putting on a 13 minutes of sheer brutality.
Yep.
The TLC speaks for itself. You can call it a spot fest if you want. I don't think it is totally, but there were spots. Just a question of whether it needed to be there or not, and you know some people question it. The main event was good. A couple of dogs in there, but not enough to dissuade you from the match. One thing is, at least all the dog matches were very short. You know, they were almost afterthoughts instead of taking up too much time. So, all right, well, you've heard from us. Time to hear from you.
Let's see if we can get this in under five. Let's go. You
all
first.
Right. Steve Riddle. The streak of hot shows continues with SummerSlam. Opener was pretty good as the new heel stable on the block, the right to censor, steal a win from Rikishi and Too Cool. Pac Dog was decent as Pac steals the win, but Dog makes him pay for it. IC tag match was good as Eddie and Val work well together and we get a shock as China is IC champion for the third time. Lawler Taz was decent as well as JR gets some revenge by costing Taz the match. Hardcore title match was really good as Shane steals the show with his death-defying bump and Blackman regains the title. 2 out of 3 falls match was awesome as Benoit once again gets the better of Jericho. TLC match was epic as ENC, the Hardys, and the Dudleys raised the bar they set at WrestleMania and Edge and Christian survive and remain champs. Cat Terry was nothing more than filler while Taker Kane was meh, with Taker more focused on taking Kane's mask off, which he does. Main event was really good, even though Angle was knocked out for most of the early part of the match. Rock retains the title, and Angle takes Stephanie to the back, furthering that issue with the Triple H. Overall, this was a fantastic SummerSlam, and the run of great SummerSlams continues, as does the red-hot year that is 2000.
Craig Dickinson, another good show from the WWF. Solid undercard with two major highlights in the 2 out of 3 falls in TLC. Edge spearing leader still looks scary to this day, and some of those chair shots in the match are hard to watch. Speaking of head injuries, the main event was great despite Angle getting knocked loopy. Rock pins the game to win, somewhat making up for Vince taking the fall at King of the Ring. Good point, Craig. Despite being totally concussed, Kurt ends the show by carrying out Stephanie to end his feud with Triple H is now white hot as we head to Unforgiven.
Ed Harris. Another month, another good show for the company. The stuff that was supposed to be good was great, and the bad stuff was kept short. Extra credit should go to Rock and Triple H for being able to improvise a really good match after Angle gets concussed. Granted, it doesn't hurt that they fought each other so many times before they could probably do a classic match while heavily sedated. Also, just a fun bit of trivia, Jerry Lawler is undefeated at SummerSlam with a reverse decision at 93, pinfalls in 96 and here. Plus, his total ring time is less than 20 minutes.
Jay Hinchy, SummerSlam Rise in Raleigh, and the next one, next to 91, this may be one of my all-time favorites. RTC make their debut. We say goodbye to DX. China captures their third IC title, and Trish plays her part as well. King and Taz have an emotional contest. JR gets some payback. Blackman and Shane have a fun match, with Shane taking the death-defying bump. Jericho Benoit have an awesome 2 out of 3, followed by the epic TLC. Jay, we know the card. Just, you know, give us some different thoughts, will you? Taker takes Kane's mask off in a nice touch. No one had ever done that before. Main event for the WWE title is a fun match. I don't know why Kurt was able to come back after being knocked silly. Or I don't know how, rather. Rock pins Triple H to retain.
B.A. Meyer. From a wrestling standpoint, this show is outstanding. Two different routes that I think they could have gone with the main event. The first one is ideally taking advantage of the red-hot Triple H angle, Steph love triangle, and having a straight one-on-one grudge match here. Rock being inserted into this match made no sense. Had they gone that route, they should have had a triple threat with Benoit, Jericho, Rock. If they were dead set on having Triple H and Angle involved in a triple threat, then I think Jericho would have been the best choice. At that point, you could have done a Rock-Benoit rematch from Fully Loaded. As it stood, I think this show, good as it was, really was a letdown from a booking perspective.
I'll grab these next two. Steve Rogers. Classic show as the WWE finally kicks the final stretch of the war's existence into high gear. The first official TLC match is a classic, though soon to be overused. Fun stuff as usual from the Canadian Chris's. Love Triangle starts to heat up as the heel version of the Mega Powers, but sadly, well, you'll be getting to that in a few weeks. And Ryan Schmock, the past few vaults, you mentioned the heat matches as if they took live at the actual pay-per-view, when they did not. They did live commentary for taped matches. They would have a live match at the pay-per-views in a month or so. Anyways, the pay-per-view event was pretty good. When the Godfather became the Goodfather, I always thought it would have him be the reluctant member, being forced, but it was not meant to be. Taker ripping off Kane's mask was awesome, and if you pause at the right time, you can clearly see his burned face, which wasn't really burned. Main event is okay.
And finally, Chris Krieger. A changing of the guard to start this SummerSlam. The RTC arrives, the antithesis to cool heels like Kurt Angle or Edge or Christian, followed by the unofficial farewell of DX. Two thoughts in the IC match. Disagreeing a bit, China going over made some sense storyline-wise. If Eddie won the belt as a face, what incentive would he have had to eventually turn heel? Hard to believe that that's what China once looked like when she had her fastball looks once. Taz Lawler was short but sweet and watchable. A candy jar of all things to end it was a nice touch. Hardcore match cemented both guys. Shane is a daredevil who will do anything for the company, and Blackman is one of the greatest hardcore champs of all time. 2 out of 3 falls is another classic, but I wish Jericho had gotten one win in their head-to-head pay-per-view showdowns of 2000. TLC was simply one of the 10 best Attitude Era matches ever, a culmination of the second golden age of tag team wrestling with the Knight Rite combination of characters, in-ring performance, and action. Thong Stinkface was a late show crowd cooldown like SummerSlam 89, though easier on the eyes and thankfully with no drooling idiot. Thank you. Side note, if you remember, Kat was on both the TV Guide cover and SummerSlam commercial leading up to this pay-per-view. Kane Taker made no sense. Taking Big Show off TV here and Kane turning heel after this pay-per-view would have come off a lot better. Triple Threat was great storytelling with Kurt, Steph, Triple H storyline, but inserting them into the title with Rock added more incentive to the hottest storyline going. Not the greatest of matches, but the drama and soap opera intrigue made up for that. One minor thought. Between China, Trish, Kat, Terry, Lita, and other women that have been mentioned this year, was 2000 the best year from the perspective of WWF eye candy?
That's a question for a whole other episode, but I would say no. I think there's years later than that that are top.
Yeah, that are better.
I think maybe so. Like 04 and even like 09, 10, and like Maurice and those chicks were around. Anyway, there's your feedback. Scott, one thing we didn't mention, of course, during that whole China Eddie stuff, that was when China was about to do the pictorial in Playboy. So that was the big part of that angle, too, that they kept saying, why is she a centerfold, blah, blah, blah. All right, there is your SummerSlam 2000. We'll be back Wednesday night. Still not going to tell you what we're doing, but we will say this. If you like Listomania, you'll like that show.
Yes.
So along those lines, we're going to have a very special guest with us as well. One of the PTB favorites will be on for that episode. Next Monday, Unforgiven 2000 with Mike Poulin cashing in. And also Wednesday. First ever Place to Be Nation Summit. We'll have myself, Scott Criscolo, Chad Campbell being the bridge. And that bridge brings us to the pro wrestling only guys, Pete and Charles. You've heard them on the PWO shows here on PlaceToBeNation.com. They'll be joining us. And this summit is going to be analyzing tag teams and who was the best member of those tag teams. Not saying who became the biggest, but in those teams, who was the best. So that'll be the first ever. This is going to become maybe like a quarterly thing. PTB Nation Summit. Next Wednesday. So that's it for us. Visit PlaceToBeNation.com. Thank you as always for your support. For Scott, I am Justin. We'll talk to you Wednesday night with a little bit of fun.
And no Oompa Loompas.
And all the Oompa Loompas.
Go ahead, get at me. Come on. one you bet that ass to. Go from Malibu to Paribu. Yeah, you had a big machine bad you. So hit me up when you pass through. I give you something big enough to tell your ass to. Swag on them even when you drag casual. I mean, it's almost unbearable. In 100 years, not there would I. Pull up outside, let you pat me back. Nothing like your leg guy, he too square for you. He don't smack that ass and pull your hair like that. So I'm jail watch, hand wait for you to salute and chew dead pimp. Not many women can refuse dead pimp. And I'm a nice guy, but don't get it because you get pimp.
Do it like it hurt, like it hurt. What you don't like work? Hey, yeah, yeah, hey. Baby, can you breathe? I got this from Jamaica. It always works for me. Dakota to Decatur.
No more pretending. Wanna get nasty, hey!